If you want to be a wise guy, you can do it anywhere. If you want to be a strong man, you can do it anywhere. If you want to be an Indian chief, cowboy, you can do it anywhere. You can't do it anymore.
Wrestling Radio. I am the internet icon, handsome Jackie Jones, along with my right hand man,
1-inch biceps, the power goat. Bah! How about that?
That was a very powerful bah tonight. And I hear him laugh in the background. Perhaps he's wondering why he decided to do this interview. I don't know. But we actually have a world class championship wrestling producer and current film documentary maker Mickey Grant with us. How are you doing today?
Great, Jack. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. OIB?
Oh, I'm doing great. Even better that we got Mickey on the line here.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, we got a lot to talk about here. You've got a lot of projects, your current projects. You got projects from a few years ago. And I would like to ask about A Gentleman's Choice, the Chris Adams documentary. And I've always heard great things about it. I know a lot of our fans who've called into the show have really liked it. And of all the people in World Class, because there's a lot of different characters, what was it about Chris Adams that made you decide that was the guy you wanted to make a documentary about?
Well, Chris and I have been great friends for a long time. And I was really shaken when he died. I was working on a documentary in North Korea when I got word. And I really had no desire to make a film, but there was some footage I'd shot. We were trying to get a show off the ground back around 1996, and I had Chris at a playground with his daughter Julia. And out of nowhere, I started asking him questions about what he hoped his life would be like now that he was out of prison from headbutting the American Airlines co-pilot. And we ended up talking. He talked about how the nights, every day was the same. You wrestle, then go to bed late after your party, then you get up, work out, then you get on the plane and fly to the next city. And it happens over and over and over. And so I had him talking like that, and he was really, really pouring his heart out about, life's ups and downs and how much he loved his daughter. And I kept thinking about that footage. I had shot it on just DV tape. And one day, about a year and a half after he died, I got the tape out, and I looked at it two or three times. And I called Gary Hart up. Gary is one of my very, very, was one of my very, very, very best friends. I still don't really believe he's dead. And called him up, and we started talking, and he knew the man that had shot Chris. And he said, well, I'd like to meet him. I don't know if I made a documentary, I don't know if he'd want to be in it. And his name was Blu Ray Pornell, and I was nicknamed Blu Ray. And I met him at a show he was promoting. He was a small time promoter, and very nice guy. In a million years, never believe he could have been through what he'd been through. And we discussed it because I knew for sure if he would go along with being in the film, then I may have a film. And so I started out shooting pretty much the same questions. I'd work with him for an entire day at a time. I did it, I think, 5 weekends. And I do point of view documentaries, so it's okay if I become friends with people, get close to them. And my big goal in telling the story, in no way did I want to lambast gentleman Chris Adams. The title came from someone we were shooting. I just picked a graveyard. It wasn't Chris's shooting. And he said, well, Chris had he had the choice. He had the choice to be a gentleman, or he had the choice to be the other. And the other had, towards the end of his life, he was a geoholic. He was taking GHB, and he never gave up trying to become have the look of Carrie Von Erich. Or his former student Steve Austin. He kept trying to get that look, and the only way you can take injectable steroids is to do GHB at night, and it just GHB is more addictive than heroin, and it just completely wore Chris out. But I appreciate you mentioning the film. It's at Amazon Video on Demand, so you can see it immediately or even buy it to keep on your hard drive, and also the DVDs available there too. Mm-hmm. But what I'm excited about today as well is Fighting Spirit Magazine is having their issue party tonight, and to me that is the best magazine in wrestling, and I sure wish we had it when I was doing my show. Brian Elliott does a mind-boggling job, and he's written a four-page story in it about my latest film, which I've been shooting in Libya. I became very close to the Libyan rebels many years before the rebellion happened when I was doing another film. And any of these projects, World Class Championship Wrestling, Gentleman Chris Adams, the Coochie Tunnels, on YouTube you'll find a lot of my older films. It's all about the same thing, doing a really, you know, first-class, well-told story and, you know, presenting it with quality, with class. And that's what's happened in wrestling. Everything, like your radio show, Jack, everything that works is not easy.
Mm-hmm. Now, how did you get involved in this? Because, you know, people are listening and they know you from wrestling, and then to hear that you've been doing a documentary about Libya, they would probably, you know, how did you get from one to the other?
Well, yeah, from wrestling. I'd always been involved in documentary. I graduated from SMU in Dallas in 1971, and my first feature length documentary was about a hippie riot that took place at Lee Park. Right when I graduated, and it was called Stoney's Greatest Hit. I lost $10,000. It took me a year to pay the film lab, but I've always been doing documentaries, and from there I eventually ended up living in Taiwan and learning to speak Mandarin Chinese, and I did quite a few documentaries about Chinese culture. How did I then get involved in wrestling? Well, I always loved wrestling. I grew up as a kid watching Ed McLemore, who had Studio Wrestling on Channel 4 in Dallas back in the 60s and late 50s. And then Bill Mercer came after him. But I would wrestle with my father, and these were some of the old great wrestlers like Cyclops and Gorgeous George and Buki Kamuka, never can say his name right, Lou Fez. And I grew up watching them, and I always loved wrestling. And when I was in high school, I went to a place called Elkins Radio School. I got my first class radio telephone operator license, which used to be important. It's not in doesn't do anything anymore. And then the next summer, I did the entire summer learning how to be a disc jockey, how to turn records and occasionally talk. And they brought Bill Mercer in to teach sports. That's when I first met Bill, which would have been in 1966. And after I came back from Taiwan, which was in 75, I went to work for the top radio station in Dallas. And I had a girlfriend whose mom wanted me to have a full-time job, and that seemed to be as good as any. And they hired Bill to come in. And I've never known anyone in my life who worked harder than Bill Mercer. Bill covered UNT. He averaged most of my entire life, I'd say, and he's still working. He's teaching at a university in North Carolina, I understand now. He averaged 16-hour days, which I ended up doing the same thing. But Bill and I came up with an idea for a screenplay, and it was about 77 or 78. And it was about the behind the scenes in wrestling. And, it was going to be a film somewhat similar to The Wrestler with Mickey Rourke. And so, Bill invited me to come along, and, I interviewed Bronco Lubitsch and everybody. Gary, that's where I met Gary Hart at the Northside Coliseum, and, made lots of notes. And then finally Rocky came out, and it was so similar to the story Bill and I were creating. We just sat there in the theater the first day Rocky opened, just stunned. And that was it. Well, while I was doing this, I had discovered what the ratings were. This was a show that aired for many, many years, Saturday Night Wrestling on Channel 11 in Dallas, which is now the CBS affiliate, but back then it was independent. It started at 10:30 at night, opposite Saturday Night Live, and it frequently beat Saturday Night Live. Saturday Night Live would get a 14 or 15 rating, and there's really no other competition. And the wrestling show owned Dallas and Fort Worth, and it's what drove Fritz von Erich's promotion in Dallas at the Sportatorium. He didn't have TV at it that time. And so Bill and I started talking about the idea of buying our own remote truck and starting our own broadcast, and we set up a meeting with Fritz. I always will call him Fritz. That's how I know him. Yeah. And from growing up watching him. And we had the meeting. We didn't seem to go anywhere. And later I learned Fritz was waiting for us to come back again. And we kind of gave up. And I went off and did a Western movie. And I came back to Dallas, and I worked for a TV station. And the deal was, if I could run it as a separate company, that's what I wanted to do. If I could run it as a separate company, I would take the job of running the production department. And they wanted to get some show that would get at least a 5 rating to go into their movies in the evening. And they had a meeting of the management, which I was one of them, and I came back in 10 minutes later and said, I've got it. And I was given permission to make the pilot. And the bottom line was doing wrestling the way it always should have been done. First class with a multiple camera, the show that had been on Channel 11, and it's a whole lot more than just multiple camera, but they had one wide shot camera with no cameraman, and they had a close-up camera, and that was it. And they erased every week and on the same 2-inch tape, and then put the new show on. And there had been really no idea that it could go national. And so I did the pilot, and then we started work. And we'd been doing Southwest Conference football and basketball, and we did often 2 major events a week. And so the production staff was, in my opinion, the best in Dallas-Fort Worth. It turned out the likes of Keith Mitchell, Dan Byam, and my right-arm man, Earl Goodrick. The name World Class Championship Wrestling actually was first uttered by Earl in a brainstorming session I'd had in my office. And My main word I wanted to get in it was class. And I don't think anyone had ever, back in the early 50s, they did very classy 16 millimeter productions of wrestling, and you saw everyone sitting ringside in suits. This is the gorgeous, gorgeous time.
Yeah.
And but for the most part, everything was done very cheaply. It's the same concept as Brian Elliott in his Fighting Spirit magazine. If you do it first class, and to me, the wrestling audience, that's what they deserve. They deserve to see this stuff really well told.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of how it all came about. And and if it wasn't for people like Kevin Von Erich and his brothers and Gary Hart, I'm just a small portion of the whole thing. It would not have happened. It was the time was right. We were at the right place in the right time.
Mm. Would you say that really changed how TV wrestling was presented? Not just-
well, it had to. It had to. Someone was, if it wasn't us doing it, I just wish I had ownership in it back then. After I did the pilot, I should have quit my job and gone back to doing what Bill and I first started out doing, which was trying to build a production company. I was completing my master's in film in film criticism at the same time. And I did my minor in management. So, it was just everything possible came together to make the show work. I did I had a course I had to take, final course in my master's, where I had to study statistics. And so I did a 300 person survey. You know, even though we were on the air doing good and having great numbers, the ad agencies, no one was spending money. All we had was the kitchen magician and hot rod shops. And I knew deep in my heart that the audience we had was the same audience that the ad agencies were looking for, which is 33-year-old female legal secretaries. And it's the only show where they got to see guys that were nearly naked. And so I did the survey, and how much does your house cost? What kind of car do you want? And it was about five pages each person. And I did it at Reunion Arena. We had well over, I think, 15,000 people. It's our first Reunion Arena match. And Reunion Arena reflected the TV audience more than the Sportatorium reflects the TV audience. And when I did that, it came out that, you know, it was that audience. And so my boss decided to hire a professional company to do it in case I might be right. And it turned out I was. And from that moment on, we got Pizza Hut, you know, all that kind of stuff. But if it hadn't been for the wrestlers, the quality of wrestlers that we had, the Freebirds, you know, and like I say, especially the Von Erichs, everything has to be right. Mm-hmm. And it was hard to ever get that magic again. And that's what did it. It was a combination of the people working on the show. Dan Bynum loved to make music pieces with the wrestlers, especially the Freebirds, you see. And you could have pulled him out of the editing room. Same with Keith Mitchell. People were so in love with this show that, after all the years, I've been in this business over 40 years, and I rarely see shows where everyone becomes so, Mike Melancic, where people become so dedicated to the show,
yeah.
You know, and, I miss that today. I don't always see that in, wrestling that's on the air today.
Mm-hmm. There's something I want to bring up, because you mentioned about, changing how you film the show, where you'd have multiple cameras and you'd have up close shots. And I know when we had Jackie Crockett on years ago,
yeah.
He mentioned something which I never noticed at the time, and now like I really can't not notice it. And he said about like on current wrestling, if you're watching Raw, every time there's impact, the camera cuts away and you don't actually see the impact. And since he told me that, every time I watch it, I notice that for like if they'll throw a guy into the corner, they'll cut away so you don't see him hitting the turnbuckle. Or in a punch, they'll cut away so you don't actually see the punch. But back then, you really did see it. Now, did they have to change the way they wrestled? So
Maybe a slight degree, but that's Crockett. Okay, what happened with us was the reverse. You know, people really did get hit. I mean, we didn't. You know, if we cut away, it was an accident that we cut away. I put PZM microphones under the mats. That's why you see a guy with a shotgun going around. Before we did this, we did Don King Boxing. I was the only production company that had approximately nearly a 50% black crew, and so he liked working with us. And so I learned how they did the audio, and it, to me, it's extremely important to get that impact, to hear it and to see it. And if there was a wrestler who wasn't capable of that, they didn't last too long. And there were plenty that might not have been capable of that. There's explosive sounds when you look back at the episodes, especially if you watch it today with a good sound system turned up loud. So it was, my impression is what we did opposite what Crockett was saying, and also opposite, for the most part, what I see today.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned, the Freebirds and the Von Erichs and, Chris Adams at the time, and all those guys were very young. Do you think that was a big part of World Class?
Oh, that was a major, major, major factor. It was, and it was also, combine it with, Gary working with them. Gary Hart working with them. The amount of punishment. Most people didn't relax. They box. One of my favorite people in my entire life is Kevin Von Erich. And he certainly pays a lot of dues today talking about seeing the impact. I don't think people would be very happy, especially the wrestlers, if we cut away on the impact, because it was awesome. And because they were young, and were capable of really, really fighting hard in the ring, it was a powerful experience. I remember one time a reporter from the Dallas Morning News came. Fritz was a little upset that I had let him in, and he sat ringside with Fritz was just seeing him, go. This was a TV reporter that covered television for Dallas and Fort Worth, and they always kind of done a hatchet job on wrestling. And this guy came in, and I believe, if I remember right, Fritz himself was wrestling that night, and they brought the intensity of the audience response up to, it was nearly a complete riot, and they did that about five times. And this guy was, you could see, was physically scared. He was sitting right next to Bill Mercer. There could be the Reunion Arena is right near where the Sportatorium used to be. You could go by a major KISS concert or something and not hear the audience. If you drove by on a Friday night on I-35, you actually could hear the crowd at the Sportatorium. It was only held 4,000 people, and the other place held about 20,000. But answering your question, yeah, the youth was a very, very big factor, but also the abilities like Kabuki. Kabuki did not look like anyone who Vince McMahon would have on his show today. When Kevin, if I remember, I always hate telling somebody else's story. Kevin tells it better than me. When he first met Kabuki, Kabuki had this pot belly, and he looked at Kabuki and said, "Kabuki, you better go back to Japan and lift some weights, work out." And he said, "Give me chets, Kevin, give me chets," And Kabuki could do a backflip from a standing position and land on his feet. I have no idea how he was able to do that. They all had just tremendous abilities. But the drama, the great ones like Ric Flair, when you look at the ability to, just be a bigger-than-life character. Rick grew up with his parents ran the Guthrie Theater in Minneapolis. He grew up understanding the power of good and bad. And we had my mind's gone blank. What's her name? Sunshine. We had with a Freeburg girl named Sunshine one time, and she was a ballet, and she was crooked behind the scenes. The audience saw it, but the referees didn't see it. And I mean, that became like the big story in all of Dallas, at law firms, everywhere you go, around the water coolers on Monday morning. She became so powerful. A lot of telling the story, too, is getting away from the ring. We had the good guys, Von Erich's form. We had Mansions. We had Armand Hussein's Learjet. We shot with reverse camera positions, and you can't just go shoot the stuff with a wide shot. You know, and the audience buy it. You know, we really worked hard, went way out of the way to do a first class job. And that's what I think made the show. That combined with the tremendous efforts by all the wrestlers.
Yeah.
It was such a special time.
When you have people like Gary Hart and Fritz Von Erich, who have been in wrestling for a long time, and they see something like that, where you're doing like you're filming something in a mansion or outside. What did they think of that?
That's a good question. Well, when I first did it, one time I was doing a thing with, H&H Enterprises, and I left one of the cameras on to run after Bill Mercer had been rudely kicked out of their office, and Fritz told me, "Mickey, no one would leave the camera in the office like that." I said, "But Fritz, it makes the scene work, you know." And so there was some tension about that. Bottom line is that it worked, and wrestling fans were happy, and I think we told a better story. And no matter what, real life, the story of the missing airplane, you name it, how you tell the story, that's not faking it or anything. You can tell the story in a very boring way, or you can do it in a very exciting manner to where you're selling newspapers. Where it's same with me telling the story of the Libyan revolution. I could tell it like CNN would, or I can tell it the way it was when, I would travel with these people with next to no weapons into a gigantic roadside battle with people that were well armed. You know, if you tell the story right, you're going to have people on the edge of their seat listening to it and trying to understand it. Same, which is true in wrestling, it's true in dramatic films, and it's true in news stories even. So that's all we would try to do. And we always tried to do it with a lot of class. We didn't have profanity. We didn't need it. We didn't need any kind of profanity. I always feel good that my mother's deceased now, but that, anything I make, my daughter is 14, they could watch it and have impact from it. And, with Chris Adams, one of my biggest concerns was his daughter eventually seeing the film. And there were lots of things I kept out of the film. That I just, they did not need to be said. Out of that project, for instance, my biggest hope was for people to see that someone as powerful and great as Chris. It opens up with a hair match at Cotton Bowl in Dallas with over 30,000 people, and goes down to the end of his life, and he's at these small promotions. And for people to see how quick the impact from alcohol and drugs is, and how it could just really sledgehammer you, achieving something like that, that's what's important to me. And doing it with dignity. I don't think in any way, unless you barely watch the film, you gotta watch everything that's in it. Nothing was done to humiliate Chris. Our bad guys work so well in world-class championship wrestling, and much of the reason why was we told their side of the story. it wasn't one-sided. And so when we had our, you know, led up to a big conclusion, usually with something at the Texas Stadium or whatnot, you know, there'd be fans on both sides, you know, and I think that's what you've got to do, you know, but you got to do it well.
Mm-hmm. You think that's when that started to change a little bit, where the crowds did start to not all cheer for the bad guy, but there would be people that did, you know, like the bad guys as well?
Yeah, exactly. And I think it started with our show. I don't think anyone had really given enough of the storyline. They'd written enough of a textured, you know, Shades of Grey storyline, before. And I think part of doing this thing right is having respect for the wrestling audience, you know, and I think some people today just don't have enough respect for the wrestling audience. I find wrestling audiences comes in all shapes and sizes, lawyers, judges, you name it, and professors, non-professors, truck drivers, but, you know, whoever they are, you've got to give them they're connoisseurs of a good storyline. You know, I have a respect for the I'm a working person. I run my own camera these days. I do the editing. I haul all the equipment, and I've got a horrible back to prove it. You know, I respect hardworking people, and I believe that they want a good story. They want something like this.
Mm-hmm. You know? Is that how you've always seen wrestling? It's storytelling. The classic.
It is storytelling. Yes. Yeah, and these guys and ladies, these guys deserve, they work so hard in the ring, they deserve to be presented well, you know, and whatever's happening with, you know, the story of grudge matches, you name it, what's going on, it's got to be presented right. It can't just be two people having a hissy fit ringside, and I so often see that's what it's often become today.
Mm-hmm. Do you still watch wrestling?
Yeah, well, not as much as I'd like. Libyans are wrestling fans, believe it or not.
Really?
One day I mentioned it was late at night to a friend I was working with in Tripoli, and Kevin Van Erich, and he immediately started talking about our old show. I don't enjoy what I see near as much these days. Mm-hmm. I see really good wrestling often. There's some great wrestlers out there.
Yeah.
And I enjoy that. You know, what wrestlers do, professional wrestlers do in the ring is absolutely mind-boggling for anyone to ever put down professional wrestling. They just not watched it before.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Libyans love wrestling. I remember, I think it might have been Israel when World Class did like a tour there once,
yeah.
And it did really
yeah.
well. No, I was always, was that shown over there? Like, what was like?
Yeah, I think Kevin told me I wasn't on that, but there was an incident with Chris there, and he bashed in the guy at their hotel wouldn't let him keep making calls. He was on the phone every single second, and they had to sneak him out of the country. But it was unbelievable. They had 5,000 people to greet them at the airport.
Oh.
You know, it was no one was expecting this. Bill was telling me a story a few years ago. He was at the Dallas-Fort Worth airport, and a man came up to him asking him what was wrong with him. Bill said, "What do you mean?" Well, the man had seen reruns of our show from, 20 years earlier, and now he's seeing Bill in his 80s, and, he's assumed Bill must be sick. It took a minute for Bill to, figure it out. Bill's got so many stories. And I mentioned all the factors. Bill Mercer is a mind-boggling factor. You know, Bill was the voice of the Dallas Cowboys. Cowboys for over 10 years. He was with the Rangers. He was the voice of the Rangers. His biggest interest in life is without question probably baseball. And he taught sports announcing at University of North Texas for 50 years. I mean, this is an unbelievable man. I cannot imagine the show without in terms of its success, without Bill Mercer, because he did the same thing that I'm talking about. He gave the wrestlers respect. He had his heart totally into what we were doing. And I don't know how Bill did it. The amount of hours he worked. The only thing Bill was really mad at me about was when we first started it, I wanted him to wear a tuxedo. I had him and Jay Salty. I had one of the Cowboys doing color for a while, and I had them wearing tuxedos. And again, I go back to that word class. I just felt it was, crucial. I think it was crucial. I think it broadened the base of the wrestling audience too. Vince went that direction as well. I think that was a really important factor in making it work. It's just like looking at Fighting Spirit magazine. Everything Brian Elliott does is, you look at that magazine, and I've not seen any other wrestling magazine like it. It's just, first class. It's top quality, well-written stories, incredible photography. And, that's what the wrestling fans deserve. The film, Gentleman's Choice, that took me 4 years to make, 2 trips to the UK, interviewing Chris's brother. Both Chris and his brother were judo champions, and his brother eventually got 2 silver medals in the Olympics. And, I really wanted to know what the roots of a lot of this, what happened were. And, they were nothing but good things. Chris's parents were, they're the nicest people you could ever meet. Mm-hmm. And his brother. And, again, it's just at the end of his life, it was really hard for Chris. Steve Austin was having all that enormous success. And Chris wasn't, and things weren't going good for him. And the thing that really started the ball rolling downhill was they had a big flight delay in Puerto Rico, I believe it was, and they let free alcohol. It's the last thing you want to do with a plane load of wrestlers. And, most everyone was working that night, so they didn't drink too much. But Chris wasn't working that night when the plane got back. And, so he kept drinking, and that's what led to him. He got off lightly. They didn't divert the plane. He headbutted the co-pilot and knocked the man out, broke his nose. Most of us, if we did that, we'd do quite a few years in prison. Yeah. And I think if Chris had, he might have gotten, his act back together. He had only one, no matter how bad things got for Chris, he had really only one main thing in his life, and that was his kids and his daughter, especially because she was little, his daughter Julia. But GHB, along with a lot of other drugs, but especially GHB, it has really ravaged a lot of wrestlers, because it's the only way, if you're doing injectables, it's the only way you can sleep at night, and it doesn't show up in the, it didn't at that time, it didn't show up, I'm not sure if it does now, it didn't show up in the urine test or blood test. It's out of your system in about 5 hours, and it's cheap, really cheap. It just got him, and this is one of the greatest persons you could ever meet.
You mentioned about Steve Austin, and we talked about earlier about most of the guys were very young when World Class was really big, and so
yeah.
Chris Adams would have been relatively young when he trained Austin. Now, do you think part of, if he would have been an older guy and his career would have been over, and he trained this guy and he became a big star, do you think that would have been different than training a guy when you're still in the peak of?
Oh man,
maybe
perfect statement. You're exactly right. Jeannie, British wife, she is a wonderful woman, and she ended up later becoming married to Steve. if I remember right, I don't know if I got this full story, but it was some kind of argument over like $100 or something. You know, it's in one of the outtakes. There's so much. I shoot so much footage for that film. I probably shot, I don't know, 100 hours. And you see somebody who's in it for sometimes 2 minutes. There's probably 20-hour shot. The genie was wonderful, and I think really contributed well to the film. I used to tell Genie my worry was that I wanted people to know that I loved Chris when they saw the film. And right after she viewed it her first time, she emailed me immediately and said I was successful. You know, that was aware. That, you know, she said people should be aware. But you're right. I think if Chris had been a lot older, I taped a commercial for Chris at Six Flags Mall in Dallas one time in the parking lot. He had a wrestling school, the one that Steve trained in. Mm-hmm. And Chris was a fantastic trainer. I'd say a lot because of his judo background. I did a lengthy segment with him training people. And in fact, that particular day, one guy broke his leg, you know, in training. And it's repetition. I forgot the word in Japanese, but Chris knew all that stuff. And we shot the commercial, and the only way he could mention Steve Austin is he wore a Steve Austin T-shirt. You know, and you know, has to do with the rights and stuff like that. And you know, now, and we made a really nice commercial. It was at the very beginning of desktop video editing. I think I had Premiere 1.0, and still managed to make a 30-second commercial with him. You know, and I think a lot of you know, today it's so much more economical to. I think some other people, I loved it when there were promotions all over the country, and now there's high-definition switchers. You can get a really good setup for under $40,000 with cameras and switcher, you know. So, you know, there's some good promotions going on around. I think there's one in Boston. There's one in L.A. I've got someone. I have a Facebook page. My Facebook is Mickey Film, MickeyFilm. And it sometimes it attracts live-ins and it attracts wrestling people. That's an odd combination. Uh-huh. And you know, I think it's happening. I think there's more and more shows gaining success and traction around the country, which is good. I think the more well-done shows by intelligent promoters, the better chance it is of bringing in lots of new talent into the professional wrestling business.
Mm-hmm. I want to mention too, you brought up Fighting Spirit magazine. The article about you, it comes out, I believe, tomorrow.
Yeah, it's actually tonight. Is at midnight. They have Brian Elliott has a online party. You can't get drunk at an online party.
Well, you guess you can, but you'll just be by yourself.
He's helping me. He's been on my Facebook page for well over 2 years. We hadn't really talked, and I've been having a struggle finishing this movie because, you know, the war's over, and they're not having a lot of success. And, well, that's my kind of story. That's what I jump in. And this was my fourth trip to Libya, and I injured my knee when I was there. I know a little bit how Kevin Von Erich feels. He used to fly off the top ropes and land on his knees all the time. Well, I just landed on my knee one time, and it's still, this is in February, and still the size of a football. And so it's I've been not going my fastest. I've been in and out of the hospital, and so Brian wanted to help, so he did a 4-page article in Fighting Spirit magazine, and a really well written article. I really appreciate it, and he emphasizes my PayPal being MickeyFilm@live.com, and you know, he believed in my documentary, and that between yourself, Jack, and Brian, we may end up with enough donations to finish it. I'm trying to be finished by everything revolves around a market, and including wrestling. There's the NAFTA market for that, but for me is Cannes and May 22nd. I've got to get DVDs out to film festival directors. It used to be that required a 16 millimeter, 35 millimeter, and I'd be, you know, competing against maybe 200 people. Now it's in excess of about 40,000 DVDs end up paying their way. You know, they charge now at all the film festivals. So, you know, you're going to like a festival here in Dallas. They're going to have 40,000 DVDs. So one of the best ways of getting their attention is to get it early, and to get it nearly all of them have the budget to, you know, go to Cannes and hand it out. And so that's what my deadline is, which is not easy. And my whole life, that's what I've been on, is deadlines, you know. And it's the same, whether it be doing a good wrestling show. Oh, the weekend David Von Erich died, and my hat goes off to Keith Mitchell and Dan Bynum and Mike Balancic that weekend. It was around the clock at the I think it was the most beautiful portrait. We were all so shocked when David died, but you know, it's always deadlines, and they're all important. And so you'd ask me how I move from wrestling to documentary. Well, to me, it's all very much it's storytelling. That's what radio's about. That's what Fighting Spirit magazine's Brian Elliott's about, and storytelling, and doing it with class, and doing it extremely well. If you do that, you know, eventually the numbers, the ratings, you're going to get noticed.
Mm-hmm. They just recently on the WWE Network, they have that match up there. When Kerry Von Erich wins the title from Ric Flair at the
right.
Von Erich Memorial, but they didn't show all the weeks of the, which is very strange on the network. Is I don't know if you know this or not, but they don't show the TV in order. They'll show like a
week. No, I've noticed that. Yeah.
Yeah, like a week. So you kind of lose the drama of you know, if you just go into a match cold, you're not gonna have the dramas if you watch, you know, the build up to that match.
Yeah, well, the build up was just as important. I mean, that not just as important. That's the story. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think that's kind of gotten lost these days. There's so many shows. They have so many shows on, and it gets confusing. We were lucky. It was pretty much just us. And we ended up on over 80 stations and 23 countries. And we just, you know, our show was it. And, well, you know, something that really bothers me, mentioned the WWE. I think it was funded, in fact, by Vince McMahon, but a North Carolina professor did a one-hour show on the history of wrestling, on the moving into the era of the WWE. And, you know, the funny thing is we're not even mentioned. And, Fritz is mentioned for, I think, 10 seconds.
Yeah.
You know, it just, when I saw that, this was a few years ago, I wondered, why would he do that? You know, yeah, and there's so many things that if they would really study, you know, how we work on the storyline with our show, because he's got great wrestlers that work on the storyline, you know, and it's there. It's just, you know, it's a lot of work to, you know, have the continuity and to present it right, and where, you know, where you're moving the fans forward, and they're glued to every single thing that's happening. I tried an idea one time. I still think it's a good idea, where we would announce that on some oddball time, not on the show, but you know, it would buy a 2-minute time, and it's, you know, one of the wrestlers in a grudge, for instance, is going to announce something. And we did it a few times, and on shows that really didn't have much numbers, like many numbers, like at 5 o'clock, and the numbers just shot up like crazy for that first, you know, it goes by quarter hour for that first 15 minutes. There are so many things, I believe, that have not been explored yet by anyone, including the WWE, that could, I think wrestling can move to even new heights. It's really funny that I left Channel 39, Continental Productions is what I call the production company. I left it to do a feature-length documentary in China called China Run that eventually aired on HBO and was in 50 cities. It's about a guy like Forrest Gump, and he runs the back roads of China for 2,000 miles. When I got back to Dallas, my boss had been fired. It was over something he was trying to do. And the new guy that took over, this is in, I guess, 1986, had the audacity to tell me that wrestling was a fad. It's over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's amazing. I think it will reach new heights. I think there's a lot more that can be done with smart apps on your phones, everything. I think there's so much more that will, you know, propel wrestling into this century further. You know, it's I think it's barely been touched. That's my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Intro, do you have a question?
Yeah, I got a question from the message board. Eazy-E, he wants to know, what was it like working in the Sportatorium? Was it really as broke down as people remember it?
Well, here's a funny thing. And Kevin, don't get mad at me for saying this part of the story, but when I was going to bring our truck over, and we eventually really got our truck modified. This was in the very early days, and we had these big old handheld canvas that the miracle Oz Coleman was able to do what he did with them. They were, you know, like 40 pounds and RCA cameras. And before we hooked our truck up, I was always very nervous about everything. And I asked a friend of mine. Fritz was very domineering. I never wanted to make him mad, but I asked a friend of mine who's an electrician to come over and take a look at it because my eyeballing it was pretty scary. And I was just concerned about when we pulled 200 amps for their truck, and I certainly didn't want to fire. And so he walked around, my friend walked around and looked at it, and there were wires that were bare. They hadn't had an inspection forever, probably for whatever reason. And I asked my friend what he would charge just to bring it up for, we want to at least have a fire. And it was like $300, and I went to Fritz, and I think he was very upset with me that I had done this. But Fritz, one reason he was successful is he was very, very tight with his money. And you know, let my friend do it. And, you know, I was real concerned about it. I had a catering company bring our food. It's one of my firm beliefs in you're doing TV production is you feed your crew well. I grew up as a union cameraman in Nabit. And, you know, if you slightly did anything wrong, you were fired. But when you were doing everything right, you were treated tremendously. And so we had to have candlelit dinner in the Sportatorium where the rats would be running past. It was really big ones. And, it was not the place you would think would in minutes be packed with 4,000 people. People had their seats that they paid for 20 years. I mean, you know, you could not sit in their seat. You're going to get hit. It was the only place Fritz had a deal with Heineken, I think, where he got for every dollar a beer, it went for a dollar, he got 50 cents. It was the only place where you could go with a straight face to the concession stand and buy a case of beer and put it over your shoulder and carry it back to your seat. People got their money's worth at the Sportatorium. I've never seen a crowd, you know, these all of them. And I knew quite a few people that were really wealthy, too, that were fans over the years. I eventually found out, you know, what they did. And they'd usually be accompanying their kids. And sometimes I know one man who's a billionaire, and he went just about, I don't think he was a billionaire at that time, but he was rich, took his kid every Friday night there, you know, and that young man is still a major wrestling fan. And, you know, there's something very magical about the Sportatorium, and I think they made a mistake tearing it down. If you went up to any of the cab drivers in Dallas back in the 80s and 90s and said, when you pick up Japanese tourists, where do they want to go? They want to go to the JR's Ranch, and they want to go to the Sportatorium. An average Dallas person would in a million years not know that, because in Japan, our show was number one on Channel 12 Tokyo, covering all of Japan on Saturday nights. And, sumo wrestling was nothing compared to professional wrestling in Japan. Mm-hmm. And, Fritz had a trade out with, I think it was Nippon TV. I might be wrong about that. And, when we first did the Channel 12 sale, I was a little worried if we were going to affect it, because that's why you would frequently see the Von Erichs were wrestling in Japan. They have a place, I don't know if it's still there, called the Egg Dome. And Gary Hart had so many stories of that. Gary is people really ever got to know Gary. Brilliant man, and his sons too. And his hobby was reading biographies. Gary was a non-BS person. He was very weighted with any expressions, word, his opinion about things. You know, when it was time to have fun, boy, he had fun. You know, but he extremely intelligent. Everybody in the Nine Tails, everyone involved in the wrestling was that I knew were extremely intelligent people. Mm-hmm. You know, I miss him. I miss Terry Gordy. I miss all those guys. Hayes, Michael Hayes. I mean, there were just so many mind-boggling people to work with. You know, I can't stop listing their names. It was without question one of the greatest times in my life. Yeah. To be associated with them.
We had Gary Hart on the show. I don't know, 2006, maybe 2005. And it's a great interview. And then we got to meet him in person. I think like the year after that. And
who was this?
Gary Hart.
Oh yeah, he did great.
Yeah, he was a great guest, and we had him on the show. Then we met him like a year later at a fan fest, and he remembered being on the show, and he joked with us, and he was like, "Oh, you must not like the interview since you never had me back on." And we were like, "Oh, we'd love to have you back anytime." And at the time, he was filming, I believe, the WWE World Class documentary. I believe the other one had just come out or around.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, I'm in that one too. One by with a Brian. It's another Brian. What's his name? Heroes of World Class Championship Wrestling. Yeah.
Both those documentaries, I think, are both of them do a very good job.
Yeah, well, it's a great film. That was his first film. What's Brian's last name? I can't think of. He's up from where you are, Jack.
Harrison.
That's it. Brian Harrison. It was his first film, and it's just our. No one could have done a better film. It's such a great film. He did a good job.
Yeah.
But not good. Excellent. Mm-hmm.
But it was actually what reminded me of this was actually when we started the interview, you had said you never know when it's going to be your last interview, so you'd like to talk on the show. And actually, when we talked to Gary Hart, when we met him, he joked about we must not like the interview because we didn't have him back on. And we said, oh, we'll have you back on anytime. And we were planning on having him on later that year. And then he actually passed away, so we didn't get to have him back on. But it was nice that he did get to do that documentary, and he also did a another. It was like guest booking a shoot DVD. So I thought it was he got to be out there again to like a new generation of people before he did pass away.
Yeah, and he also wrote a tremendous book. That's good. Turning around to see where it is, and I don't think there is a better book about a professional wrestler than Gary's book. I can't see it. I'm looking at my bookshelf right now. And I'm only in two pages of it. There it is. That's my only thing. Playboy Gary Hart. The man that worked with Gary writing it, I guess his name is Varielli, something like that. He and I talked quite a few times as they were going through different editions. Gary worked so hard on that book. It says, "My life in wrestling with a little help from my friends." He was a Beatles fan. But if you haven't read it, I know for a while his sons were selling it on the internet, but, it's really worth reading. And, you know, Gary actually, people try to, you know, think different things about wrestling. Well, Gary was, I think, 12 or 13 and some kids, older kid, maybe 17, stole his bicycle. And Gary got a baseball bat and waited for the guy and broke both of his legs.
Oh.
And, I mean, and this is his persona. And he actually worked for a gang collection agency in Chicago, you know. And, you know, Gary certainly didn't have to try to develop something, you know. That was Gary. And that's why I say you don't BS Gary. You know, he's, a straight shooter. You know, it's like just all these guys. Kevin Von Erich, you would not meet anybody more likable, more honest, you know, more down to earth. You know, I'm so relaxed when I'm around Kevin. You know, Bill and Kevin and I got to go to Costa Rica 2 times. I don't know exactly why all that happened, but boy, did we have a good time. We used to sit down in the main square in San Jose, and Kevin would buy these Cuban cigars, and that's illegal. Yeah, they must have been the fake Cuban cigars, and we would sit in the square there in San Jose smoking these cigars. And I shot a bunch of footage of us down there. I have absolutely no idea what we could do with that footage. But we just had a really, really good time. One time we were all three together, and a hurricane forced the plane to have to land, and it was like some feel for drunk hearts. We had to wait out the, you know, hurricane moving away from us before we took back off. But I don't know anyone who's more, and his wife, Pam, and his kids. I mean, I can't stop when it comes to Kevin. So family, his mom, who's more genuine person, genuine people, you know. So, that's such a big factor of how all this thing came together. It was perfect coming together of the people, of the technology, of storytelling, of everything and everyone's life. You know, it was so beautiful.
We got a caller on the line here, 848. Who are you and where are you calling from?
This is the son of a plumber. I'm calling from Jersey. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. You have a question for Mickey?
Yeah, I just agree. I'm glad I caught you, Mickey. I agree with you about Gary Hart's book. I refer to it as the Encyclopedia of Wrestling Books.
Oh, good.
It was a great read, you know, and from what I understand, it's a hard get now, so... But,
I can hardly believe it. I even called and left him a message after I found it out because I thought, you know, he had done that on purpose, and his sons overheard my message. But it was too big a shocker. I was going to a Chinese restaurant with him, like that's across the street from where he lived, a couple of days later. And it was a sudden. It was, I don't think there had been any history of heart problem or anything. It was just boom.
I understood, I got, he didn't put himself over so much as a booker, I thought. Like, even in his later days, you know, the people that he took to and took under his wing, he really did,
right. You
know, go through the whole explaining process about how he would book a territory with three towns running. I just thought that was really cool, you know.
Yeah, he did that. You're right.
He shared the info, and I'll kick back and listen. Thanks for taking.
Oh well, thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Take care. Chris was that way too. Chris, I don't know of a harder job, and I've heard Gary say this, than being an independent booker. And Chris was very good at that. And it's a really hard life. But like I say, with a lot of the new technology, especially with switchers,
to where you can switch and you can feed a signal on, you know, stream it. You know, YouTube soon is going to start where you can make money streaming. And you can already do that on Vimeo. And so that's part of the reason I don't think we haven't seen anything yet. I think there's going to be a rise of promotions across the country, and I think the creativity and the use of the technology is going to be such that it's going to give Vince McMahon a real run for his money, you know, because there's a lot of talent and a lot of creative people all over this country.
Mm-hmm. Now, him doing the WWE doing the network, because some people said that could actually change, you know, TV, and I don't know if you see the numbers, but a lot less people have bought it than they thought would. And some of the cable companies have dropped their pay-per-views because it was like a breach of their contract. Do you think in the long run this network will be a success, or do you think it...
I don't know about their network. I just think I know maybe a little about wrestling. I think wrestling will be a success.
Yeah.
If you have a repetitive storylines, and if you don't have your fans sitting on the edge of their seats wondering what's going to happen next week, you're not going to have a market. Too many people have done that. Major American networks, you name it. Like I was saying with film festivals, including raising money for my films. If you are, it was 200 films I compete against back in the 90s. Now, because they allow DVDs to enter, I'm competing against 40,000. DVDs. So you send it in as a DVD now. And I think the same thing's going to happen with, you know, what's going on with Vince McMahon. I know a great promotion in Boston. I think they're on my Facebook. And then there's one in Los Angeles that's really doing good right now. And, it used to be for a high-definition switcher. That's where you can switch between cameras and everything. You feed the switcher, and it goes out either to a master tape or it goes out to satellite. The fact that all of the above with HD cameras cost, $2 million. Now, you can get the whole thing for under $30,000 in output of broadcast. Nearly all broadcast signals are MPEG-2. And Fox is 720, believe it or not. The others are MPEG-2 1080. And so, with people like Netflix and with eventually YouTube letting you have a channel and broadcast, I think somebody with relatively little money can jump in there today and do very well. To me, the big question is it's got to help wrestling. And when I say help wrestling, it's got to, people training people from young kids wanting to be a wrestler when they grow up and starting training and mixed martial arts. If you don't have the potential wrestlers out there, you're in trouble. But I think they're there. I think they're already there. And like Kevin's son, Kevin just did a great piece on NPR, and most of it was about the fact with everything that happened in his family, he's helping train his son. And his son's going to be great. Is great already. So if you've got the talent and you've got the broadcast. And a methodology to get it to the audience, it's going to work. I remember telling someone, I used to know a lady that I did a TV show with in Monaco, and she wasn't very experienced as a producer, but what she was experienced at was this is back 5-6 years ago. She was an expert at the numbers, running the numbers, doing analogy of how many people are going to be watching TV shows and movies on the phone. And I had somebody, I'd tell people, this is what she specializes in, and she actually consults with Spielberg. And they thought I was crazy when I talked about this. And now you see it all the time on every type of device possible.
I think Brian Elliott, he's got his Fighting Spirit magazine in a form where you can download it to, you know, any of your devices. I think that a handful of people will probably come about who turn wrestling upside down, inside out, and rebirth it to where it is exciting, where the bandwidth, people are fighting for the bandwidth. It's always historically been a tremendous medium for TV broadcast. In broadcasters, I've found have always fallen against it. I don't know why, but then the buyers, when we first got our show going, we were up to maybe show number 40 or 50 before I did the survey for my, master's degree. And we, you know, all of us, every one of us working there, Keith, Dan, everyone, because everyone they knew that, you know, we knew that the upscale audience, which at that time was like a 33-year-old female legal secretary, was watching our show. We had to prove it to them. And, you know, for some reason, broadcasters just they seem to frequently have a prejudice against wrestling. I think wrestling actually invented reality TV, too. I should add that. Reality TV, how they would shoot it, is much more the way we used to do our show. But I think it's there, and you know, it just takes bigger than life personalities. It takes people like the Von Erichs and like Kevin Sun, and you know, it would take off. You know, I'll say something, it's a crazy thing. Working, trying to make a show like what I was just talking about, mm-hmm. and doing my new film, Burning Green, to me, they're both just as enjoyable. One is about a tremendous, passionate people who overthrew a dictator who was impossible to overthrow. You know, that sounds like a whole lot of our scenarios. Are, you know, these Libyan people are more realer than life. And, you know, I just love storytelling. And, you know, I find that universities, you can go all the way through getting your film degree and oftentimes hardly, you know, one time I wrote a paper, I was the, about.com filmmaking guy for a few years. And I wrote one of the little articles I had on it. The secret of screenwriting: story, story, story. All three of those, you know. And I think a whole lot of what happens in you know, in our schools turn out people who end up working doing television and wrestling and all that. There's just not near enough emphasis on getting the story right. If you got the story right, you're going to have, you know, and this can be a story from reality, like my film Burning Green. You know, you're going to have the audience sitting on the edge of the seat, you know, trying to wonder what's going to happen next. You know, that's what I struggle with every day. I've never found it easy to easily tell a story. It's a lot of work. And I think a lot of people like Vince McMahon, they just get kind of in a rut. They've done it so many times. They get kind of in a rut. And, you know, next thing you know, you know, networks are turning them off, turning them down, you know, but that has nothing to do with wrestling. That just has to do with, you know, bad storytelling.
Inchman, you have another question from the board?
Yeah, I had a question from Changeman. He wants to know, which wrestler's death affected you the most?
Oh, man, oh, man, oh, man, oh, man. Well, it would be it's without any question would be one of the Von Erichs. You know, I don't know if it was David or Mike or Kerry the most. You know, it was just a devastating. I can't put a number to which one have been worse. And Chris was a shocker because I knew all of them. And you know, it was.
We're all young at the time.
Yeah, me too. I remember, I called, I was in some kind of, you know, back in the 80s, we had all those how to get rich, seminars, or how to run a company perfect. And I was at one of those and I called Fritz up. No, Fritz buzzed me on my pager. I remember the pagers. And I called him immediately and he told me on the phone.
And I walked out of the thing immediately and went back to the station. And we all knew what to do, that we had to collect all of the material with Sean on David, some great stuff with him on horseback. And it lasted. I don't think anyone slept for over two and a half days. It was just impossible to believe that it happened. And, same with all the Von Erichs. Chris was, I think just about anyone who was close to him would say he was on the rebound. You know, he was on the rebound. And, he was really trying to, he had a new marriage, and he was, really trying to get himself together spiritually. And, he had a lot of support from a new wife. And, that was a really, really big surprise. It's stunning the number of wrestlers. When Chris died, someone wrote an article about, it included over 50 top professional wrestlers dying before they were, 50 years old. And, it was amazing. And I got interested in trying to look at, I never was able to statistically be successful, but how many people were doing things like GHB. If you don't know what GHB is, it's the date rape drug, but it lets you sleep. You know, if you're changing hat sizes, changing glove sizes while you sleep at night or attempt to sleep at night, you're not going to sleep. And the problem is people the next morning, they'll take this stuff, and it's liquid, and it's for like $20, you'll get 5 hits out of it. And they feel great. But the problem is next thing you know, you're doing nine of the little cups a day of it, and you're out of your mind. I wonder how many possibly were involved in with GHB. It became popular at the WCW in about the year, I guess, 79, I think. In fact, Chris was there with Benoit, and you go on a lot of hearsay, so I don't know anything for sure, but it was real popular because it didn't show up in the drug test.
Mm-hmm. Warrior just passed away, and did you be around him at all when he was the Dingo Warrior?
No. Yeah. He also had another name back then. We would shoot promotional tapes for Fritz on Friday. He was in many of our episodes, but I'd see him more than ever on Friday mornings, which have usually the station lobby would be full of about 40 wrestling stars, and Fritz would call them in for them shooting their promo. He had everyone on the road. I think Kevin told me one time they fought an average of eight times a week, twice on Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the findings were with him.
It came out as a massive heart attack.
Well, that's sad.
Yeah,
he was just having a good resurgence.
It's very odd. It was weird timing. I mean, he hadn't been in WWE for 18 years, and he came back and apparently made peace with Vince McMahon and a bunch of different wrestlers he hadn't talked to. And first time, out doing a promo in front of all the wrestler fans and whatnot, and then a day later he passed away.
Yeah, I don't know whichever sport gets more exposure when someone dies than wrestling, it seems. Every death gets a tremendous amount of exposure, but that's a sad way for wrestling to get exposure. I believe that, I think everyone is more cautious. I know Kevin won't go in the ring again. He's had 3 concussions. I think people are much more educated about the dangers, and I think in terms of looking at the future of wrestling, will it be safer? Probably in terms of things like concussions. I think that it's been a learning. It's been a national learning exercise, and just like American football has been.
I'm an optimistic person.
Yeah.
You know, and people will sit there, why are you so optimistic about Libya? All we hear is bad stuff every day. I said, well, you don't know the Libyans I know. You know, they've had a dictator for 42 years. They're going to get themselves together. And they're doing actually a pretty good job of it. It's not easy. And just about everything I've found in life, any stories I've been involved with, wars, Vietnam, I've done two films there, you know, nothing comes easy. Mm-hmm. Who wrote that song?
Matt from the chat room, he actually had a question. He wanted to know, which do you feel like you enjoy filming on better, digital or film?
Oh, that's a real good question. Well, I'm a film person, but digital today is tremendous. They just had the NAB show in Las Vegas, and there's some cameras out now for like a little $6,000 that they are just as good as 35mm. One of the biggest problems with digital is unless you use the right filters, it nearly shows the skin too clearly. It blemishes everything. You know, I don't even hardly think of it as digital anymore. It is digital, but, you know, it's just, you have these big CMOS cameras, like both of mine I'm shooting with right now are 16 megapixels. It's a tremendous picture at 60p progressive. And the cameras I'm talking about that are just now coming out are 20-24. And they shoot 4K. The new thing is going to be 4K. 4K takes up tremendous amount of bandwidth. Obviously, it's better than twice as good as HD. And they're selling the TVs now. There, Sony's got one for about $5,000. But, you know, in about 3 years, those will probably drop down to, you know, like $2,000 or so. And you would think, how could that be much better? Well, you got to see one. You know, they're incredible. A lot of people in the industry really thought things were going to move towards 3D. 3D is problematic. It's really difficult to do it right. I mean, you can't use a cheap camera and get 3D right. Mm-hmm. You can take a 2D show and convert it to 3D, and it's not too bad if the master was shot well. But, you know, I was talking about how you can broadcast so economically today with the system. But you have to look at the bottom line of what's actually coming down the pike or being broadcast on the satellite. And I said it's MPEG 2, you know, 1080. You know, there have been great digital cameras out for the last 5-6 years, low cost, that can do that. But what's really good now is the switchers can handle it. I mean, you literally have a switcher with monitors and everything. It's all opens up like a suitcase, and you know, it's tremendous. So, you know, I look at that combined with the amount of wrestling talent that's out there, and the fact there's new avenues that are opening up, like YouTube paid and Netflix. Already Vimeo's got it. And you develop your own channel on the internet without any real upfront cost, and you share the revenue. Effectively, you're sharing the revenue. And so the potential for people from out of the blue to jump into the game is outrageously good.
Now, I don't know if you want to talk about this, but for someone who does their own videos and does their own editing, what kind of things for someone who would do it at home, like if they could do it, you know, within like a budget, what kind of computer editing do you think they would use?
Well, you want to generally, I suggest Apple, and you want to go with a Mac Pro, and you want to have, in my opinion, at least 16 gigabytes of RAM. And I do both Avid Media Composer 7.2 now, I guess it's that. And what I've been slowly switching to is Adobe Premiere CC.
It's just outstanding, and it's very intuitive. If you've never worked any system, oh, and Final Cut's getting better again, but I think they made a big mistake. They're not out of the game, but it's more wedding video people are using it now. Before it had been, it was Final Cut 7. It was, tremendous. But if you're just starting, I'd suggest that you go with Adobe Premiere. It's more intuitive than Avid. And you can pop up After Effects. You don't have to, load up a QuickTime and then move over to After Effects. You can call it up within Premiere.
Adobe Bridge.
And, Photoshop as well. Call it up within Premiere. So that's why, since back when we were talking about the show we were doing, where the switch, the editing room we were using was about $400,000. And we had an oddball switcher, I'm trying to think of the name of it. And then a lot of shows were actually edited out of the truck when it was parked in the garage. And Apex BPR2Bs, I actually ended up owning one, which cost $1,500. When those things were new, they were about $50,000, something like that. So you look at the how downhill pricing's gone. That's why I'm saying there, the potential is just tremendous. But getting the technical stuff right, that's one thing. Getting the story right. Oftentimes what really is missing is technical people and storytelling people they don't get along. it just doesn't happen. What's been nice is that, like myself, like on Burning Green, I can do everything, so I don't have to have a war with an engineer going on all the time. That's a very big difference from the way it used to be. And like I say, if people will give respect to giving respect to the wrestlers, that's the number one thing. And then giving respect to the story. And that applies in football, basketball, anything, But what attracts people to athletes is their story.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes I don't think even sportscasters don't get that. People get so full of themselves that they don't really necessarily realize what's, making their numbers tick.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, we got Shaheen is on the line. Shaheen, do you have a question?
I'm just listening, man. I'm too young for class.
I'm an old guy.
But hey, while I'm on here, I just want to, I'm not from Libya, but I am from Iran, so I can kind of relate to the, I grew up in war, so, I appreciate what he's trying to do and, inform people that, people over there in third world countries, that, we're not, some crazy people or anything like that, like we're portrayed.
Right.
So I do appreciate that. But as far as world class, I'm just observing and just, soaking all the information in this, I'm only 26, so.
I'm glad you called. As a group of people, the Libyan people are absolutely mind-boggling. And I was there during Gaddafi. I did another film there called Injection. And, the idea that they could overthrow this guy, they had no weapons, they didn't have anything. How are they going to do that? And, boy, did they pay for it with blood. Just unbelievably intense battles, one after another. And Gaddafi's people, I think, got very scared of them because they were people who literally walk into just a solid wall of anti-aircraft bullets, hitting them, and just keep moving forward. And I've never seen anything like it in my life. And in my opinion, that story, I hope I'm telling it, in my opinion, just getting to the guts of the story, the heart of what these people did is not known, But that's why Brian Elliott's helping me tonight. He really amazed me. He's in Fighting Spirit magazine. He's got my PayPal being MickeyFilm@live.com. He's got everything listed about how to help contribute to the film. He's been online and on my Facebook page and seeing all the struggles I've been having.
That's the one thing with any of these projects. If you decide to do it, you gotta hang in there to the bitter end until you get it done. It's so hard to do, most people quit before they get there. So my best advice to anyone wanting to do, whether it be world class championship wrestling or anything, is to make sure that this is a story that you want to do.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to thank you for coming on, and I also want to ask. Now, if people would like to donate some money for Burning Green to see you get this out there, how would they go about doing that?
Oh, I appreciate that. Yeah, it's my PayPal. They just search, for instance, www.burninggreensound.com. They can go to PayPal, which is Mickey Film at live.com. It's MICKEY, like a Mickey Mouse, Mickey Film at live, LIVE.com. And, put my name, Michael Grant, and you can make a PayPal donation. And also, I've got Burning Green Editing at Indiegogo.com. That's a confusing bunch of stuff. But if you search my name on Google, put in quotations Mickey Grant and then Burning Green, you will come to all kinds of material that's there.
Very cool. And I'll have the links to the Indiegogo campaign and the website up on our website, so it'll be easier for people to find that.
Yeah. Yeah, there's three Indiegogos. The current one is editing. Indiegogo Burning Green Editing.
Right.
And that's the one that's active.
Very cool.
I appreciate it.
Oh, we appreciate you coming on, and hope you all the best in getting that finished and seen.
Thank you. Well, I'm going to be working on it late tonight.
Very good. And we would actually keep you on here longer, but we have another guest who actually just tried calling in. He's going to come on at 9:30.
Oh, hey, my daughter's on the other line, so it's perfect timing.
Excellent.
I appreciate it. Thank you a lot, Jack. I enjoyed talking to y'all.
Yeah, enjoyed it. It was great. Love to have you back sometime.
I look forward to it.
Thanks.
I'll see you.
All right. All right, guys. We'll be right back, and we're going to have Big Bully Busick back on the show.
Hello, this is Bobby Chigarella. Hello to all my Juicy fans. This is In Your Head, In My Juice, In Your Blood. Keep it up, and God bless you all. The Juice.
All right, and we are back here once again at In Your Head. And now we are joined by the man returning to the show. He's actually one of my favorites, and he might think I say it to everybody, but I don't. We have Big Willie Busick on the line.
Well, what a great pleasure to be back on the program again, guys. I think you do an excellent job in bringing the news to the wrestling fan and letting old gray-haired bullies like me come on and talk about the past.
Excellent. And one of my favorite things about you, and I'm a man who wears many different hats. I wear a top hat a lot. I've got a bowler, and you have a tremendous bowler.
Well, you know, that really fitted with a handlebar mustache and made the bully what he was, and characteristically, it really enlightened the character of Big Bully Busick.
Yeah, honestly, like, that was always why I really, that character was, it was a character. It was like almost like, a cartoon up there on the screen. It was, he had the turtleneck, he had the bowler, the big mustache. And I just, that look was tremendous when I was a kid, and even now when I watch it. And, like, how did that look evolve? Like, how did you come up
with it? Well, it's kind of ironic, because maybe a lot of your fans out there listening don't remember the days of when the Mario game was popular. But between that mustache and that hat, it paralleled that game. And the wrestling fans really latched on to that. And, when we were on ESPN and down in Georgia and Florida, when we were wrestling, before I went to the WWE, the fans would start that chant, Mario, Mario. And, it just fit right in for the time.
Yeah. You should have had I guess so Harvey Whippleman could have been your Luigi.
If you want to say that, I'm all right with that. never quite looked at it like that. But I know Vince didn't want anything to do with the Mario thing. He made sure that we didn't promote that because there was times when the fans would start that in the WWE, and you know, we were given strict orders, and we were not to acknowledge that.
Now, do you think he was, like, afraid, Nintendo would, like, sue, or?
Well, you know, I don't know the answer to that. Mm-hmm. I know that, you know, when I come out with the character, I want to be, like you said, very cartoonish.
Mm-hmm.
Vince absolutely wanted nothing cartoonish about the Bully when I come in. In fact, he wanted more of a, as I look back on it, he wanted more of a Stone Cold type attitude and mentality, which I should have picked up on, and I guess I'd have been doing a little bit better financially, huh?
but that wasn't really like what was going on in wrestling at that time. So I could see how it wouldn't have made too much sense. But do you think you would have been able to pull that off, you know, at like a serious character?
Well, the way I had the character mentally in my head and what Vince wanted was definitely two different things.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, this comes back to if there's any young wrestlers out there wanting to make it into business. Sometimes you should listen to guys that have been doing it for a long time and know how to make what they want instead of being a hard head and wanting to do what you want. I wasn't necessarily a hard head.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't grasping what they wanted. And, and at the time I didn't know it, but I was dealing with some very serious health issues in the ring that I thought was stage anxiety or I was just blowing up in the ring. And a guy by the name of Tom, I can't pronounce his name correctly, but he wrote a big article on it. I did a retirement match here for a charity outfit a little better than a year ago, but he wrote a full article on it where I was locked into chronic AFib and I could have packed it in at any given time in the ring.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's pretty scary then, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, everybody's talking about the passing of
the Warrior.
God rest his soul,
mm-hmm.
and memories eternal. But a lot of the boys have really passed away young, and it's a sad thing. And I don't know what it does or doesn't have to do with wrestling, but, it was about 9 years ago that I actually had a sudden death cardiac arrest and in the gym, and they brought me back with paddles. Thank goodness they had the paddles there.
Yeah.
And that's how we discovered that I was actually had a heart condition.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so something like that could, you know, you could have it, but you're not going to know about it unless they actually would look for it.
Well, my problem was I was in AFib, and you see it advertised on TV all the time today. You see the commercials for AFib, and it's nothing more than a regular heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to do with the pumping of the blood. Needless to say, if you're out there running around and your cardio's up, you know, you could throw a blood clot and good night, sweet Irene, you're going to be graveyard dead.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Warrior, were you around him at all?
No, I never got a chance to be on any card with the Warrior. And sometimes I don't get these timeline rights, but I'm pretty sure that Warrior left as I was coming in, I come in late 88,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know when Warrior had left down there, but I think it was right when I was coming in.
Yeah, and then he probably came back, like, because he came back a few times. He probably came back right when you were leaving.
Yeah, yeah. My deal was a little more than a 2-year deal that I was there, and I was on TV maybe 6-8 months out of that 2 years.
Why was that? That you were only on so much, you know, for your whole contract.
Well, you know, when the Bully character hit ESPN, is when I started getting phone calls, and because you know it went nationwide, and at the time that was with Global, and Bill Eadie was the booker down there, and Bill had put me with Bad News Brown as a tag team, and that was something that I overlooked in and of itself too. Because, you know, I actually started when it was the WWWF.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always considered the WWE home. So when I got the opportunity to go talk and get this contract with Vince, I jumped at it. Again, being young in the business, wanting to make it to what we called New York at the time, you know, I never really considered the potential of the tag team of Bad News Brown and Big Bully Busick. I mean, that was a tag team that was made in heaven right there.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's interesting, too, because you talked about McMahon wanting you to be more of a the serious guy. And I always thought Bad News Brown would have done, even though he was a big star, would have actually even done better later on, because he was really a guy I think would have fit in during the Attitude Era.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
The cartoon era, you know?
Say it again, buddy?
I was just saying, sometimes he really stuck out in the like the 80s era because everyone was kind of cartoony, and yet he was like this real serious, no-nonsense guy.
Absolutely, and you're right. He would have fit in perfect. Imagine if it had come later down the road. It had been slaying him. And he did when he was in there anyway. I mean, yeah. His serious, no-nonsense attitude was over.
Definitely. Yeah, I always liked it because he was, even for the, when they do the Survivor Series and it, all the heels would be friends with each other just because they were all bad guys would like each other, I guess. But he'd be the one guy that actually wouldn't like the other bad guys and he'd walk out on them. And I remember as a kid, I always thought, hey, that guy's, you know, that guy's even worse than the other guys. He doesn't even like the other.
Yeah, yeah. When we sit and talk about this, isn't it great what the sport of professional wrestling, how it's gotten into so many people's, the wrestling fan is going to be the greatest fan in the world. And that's why I like going to these autograph signings. You know, I'm going to be heading up to, the New England Fan Fest, on June 21st this year. And, I'm really looking forward to it. It's up there in Warwick, Rhode Island at the Chrome Plaza. Did you happen to see anything? Did you see one of their posters yet?
I have. I actually at the bus station where I go to, they have some flyers there. I was very happy to see that.
It's absolutely amazing the lineup of stars they have. I mean, they got Scott Hall, Razor Ramon coming in. They got Big Papa Pump. They got Anvil, one of my old nemesis, coming in.
Mm-hmm.
The list goes on and on and on. And if you're a wrestling fan, you definitely want to show up June 21st at that Chrome Plaza in Rhode Island.
Yeah. And I grew up in New England. I'm from Massachusetts, from the Cape. And so it's cool because they have a lot of the big-name guys that you just mentioned. And then there's a lot of local guys for people around here who grew up around here like myself, like Mario Mancini. And I know I think he'll be there as the Duke of Dorchester, Pete Doherty, which was actually one of my favorite I don't know what you would call him, enhancement guys. When I was a kid, I always got a kick out of him. And what's interesting is Mario Mancini is, from what I understand, he was your original opponent when you made your debut for the WWF.
Mario was my first opponent, and, you know, he come in and was a great guy, great wrestler. And, you know, listen, we all pay our dues to get through this business. Mm-hmm. And just like him, there was a day when I went to the WWF, I can remember tag teaming with Peter Maivia. I can remember tag teaming with Dominic DiNucci and a wrestling match. I remember Nikolai Volkoff when I first started. He threw me over the top rope so hard I could have took off like a rocket ship. Spiros Arion, you know, these are the guys that I'd go to TV and do what I had to do in the business. When I get on these shows and I talk about those times like that, it's just amazing how time has flied and where wrestling has been and where it is now.
Yeah. This, not only is it the New England Fan Fest where you get to meet the guys, you get your autographs, and you can do signatures and everything, you know, for photo ops, but they also have the New England Hall of Fame, which is very cool because they get to induct, I believe Harley Race is being inducted this year, and a lot of local guys, and it's just a really great event.
Oh, it's a super event. The people that put this on go to great lengths to give. When the people come there, they're going to get their money's worth. They're going to enjoy from the minute they walk through that door to the minute they leave. They're going to get their money's worth.
Now, another guy on this show, which I think actually is very similar to you in kind of stature, and is Scott Norton. Have you ever worked with him?
No, I never have, and you know, you're not the first person that has said that. But Scott has that powerlifting look, if you will, and I don't know Scott's background, but certainly, you know, I have an extensive background in powerlifting, and mm-hmm. did a couple big powerlifting shows on ESPN, which I was the promoter and director of. If any of you wrestling fans want to look at it, just go on YouTube and look for Mountaineer Cup, and you'll see some of the stuff I did with powerlifting.
Mm-hmm. That's very cool. I know Scott was a big arm wrestler before he went into professional wrestling, but I don't know.
Well, take a look at the guy. He's a monster.
Yes, he is. Yes, yes. So is Jim the Anvil. Another, you mentioned. Now, did you like travel with Jim the Anvil Neidhart, or?
Anvil and I had several matches against each other. I didn't really travel with him, mm-hmm. But there was times when you know Jim the Anvil. You want to talk about a strength athlete? This guy is right up there with him. He was doing the CrossFit stuff before it was popular. You know, Anvil style strength training was different than the ironheads like me that was just your basic squat, bench, and deadlift. Anvil was doing the heavy tires and his own form of kettlebell type training. Anvil was one of your original strong men.
Yeah. From what I understand, that's how he actually got the name the Anvil, was when he was training with Stu Hart. He like picked up an actual anvil and threw it or something, and so they nicknamed him the Anvil, which would make sense.
Well, you can always tell the wrestlers that did more strength training versus the wrestlers that did more the physique training, you know, outside the ring.
Yeah.
Just by their physiques.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you think the his strength training, do you think that fits better with a professional wrestler, you know, to be able to work in the ring and take the bumps and the punishment?
Well, you know, again, if you go back to my era, you know, the guys were all, to go anywhere, you had to be 250 or above.
Mm-hmm.
You know, today's wrestler, they're weighing anywhere from 210 to 220, and if you're 240, you're a bigger man. But now you see it starting to come back around. You're seeing the bigger guys in there once again. So, you know, the wrestling business evolves, and the guys with the knowledge like Paul Heyman, Vince, and Triple H, you know, they're marketing geniuses, and they're gonna give to the people, they're gonna give the market what it demands.
Now, we brought this up before we went live here, and the Stump Pullers, I always actually really liked that movie. I thought it was very cool, and I don't think I've ever seen anyone do that since. Where did that movie originate? And you were telling me it was actually pretty hard to do, and it's
Well, it was hard for me to do because of my physique.
Right.
You know, in my powerlifting career, if it's one lift that I always hated, it was the deadlifts. And the stump puller is very similar to that because you got to be able to bend down and get the bar. Well, I'm thick muscle and I don't stretch very easy. And it was actually hard for me to get down in there and grab the ankle so that I can get the guy up. So strong, you know, they wouldn't let me use the hard punch like I was using in Florida, Georgia, and on ESPN, which, by the way, wasn't the hard punch. It was really the bully blaster because the hard punch is illegal and the bully would do nothing. It was illegal. But nonetheless, Chief J. Strongbow said, look, your finishing move is going to be the stump puller. I said, Chief, that's going to be hard for me. He said, I don't care. You're doing it. That's it. I said, all right, Chief, your call. And boom, the stump puller became my finishing move, and that was it.
Oh.
And it hurts, too, I got to tell you. You get put in that, it hurts.
I would assume it would. That's whenever I would see it, I would say, that looks like that would hurt quite a bit. Was that hard for other guys to take as well?
Well, yeah. I mean, first of all, if you got a guy that, is not limber enough, and you have that new volume, you're stretching their hamstrings and their erector muscles to the point of damaging them. So, you know, you had to get it on. You had to get the referee in place, and you didn't want to hold it too long or too hard, because you could wind up hurting the guy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was definitely a shoot move.
Yeah. Inchman, was there a question from the message board?
Yeah, I had a question from Changeman. He'd like to know, what was it like working Sid Justice?
Sid and I are actually very good friends, and we were training partners for years. I got nothing but good things to say about Sid. I mean, look at the physique. You never found a man that trained harder than Sid Vicious, and he come in, he was a crowd pleaser. And what was it like to work him? Mm-hmm. I wrestled Sid one time when he come in and did the save when I was picking on Mike McGurk. Mm-hmm. And if you watch that clip on YouTube, I'll tell you what, for a big fat guy, I shouldn't say that, I moved pretty good. I come up pretty high on that powerbomb and the chokeslam.
Mm-hmm. Well, was that a hard move to take, the power bomb? Because, I mean, obviously it wouldn't be fun to take, but because Sid is so tall, it's going to be a big fall.
Well, look, anytime you take a body slam, mm-hmm. A power slam, a choke slam, you're going to land and it's going to hurt.
Yeah.
There's just no two other. You got to. There's no other way to say it. When you land, you hit, you hurt. So the answer is, yeah, it hurts. Come on.
Now, why didn't they let you use the heart punch? Was there any reason?
I don't know the reason. And you know, whatever it is, it was their call, and they were paying me, so we did what they said to do.
Yeah.
I don't know if they thought it was. I don't know the reasoning.
Mm-hmm. Did you get that move? Did Ox Baker teach you the ways of the heart punch?
No, that was something that we developed down in Georgia. Joe Pedicino, who I don't know if you guys know Joe, but Joe and Barney Blackstone, Barney was one of the people that actually come up with the name Bully, Big Bully Busey, because I described the character. I just lost the Georgia Heavyweight Championship. I was their heavyweight champion down there in Georgia. So I was coming back. And, you know, I was originally a heel and then came back as a babyface, won the title. And so now I was upset that I got a bad call. So when I come out with the derby and the cigar and the red turtleneck, Joe Pedicino and Barney Blackstone said, well, you just described the bully. And so there's how Big Bully Busick actually began.
Yeah. Now, from there, they were also involved with Global, right?
Yeah, they were very much involved with Global.
Yeah. Now, when Global started, because I used to come home every day from school and watch Global on ESPN. I remember it was like, I think it was on 3, and so I'd have to get off the bus and go right home so I could watch it. At the time, I mean, it was loaded with people. You were there, and guys who went on to become Harlem Heat were there, and just tons of people. Raven, Mick Foley was there for a while. Did you think this was really going to take off to be like a big wrestling company?
Yeah, well, we really did. You know, Axe of Demolition was the head booker, and he was bringing. He had the resources for all the talent, and like you said, you'd come home from school. Every kid in the country would run home from school to watch wrestling, mm-hmm. and it just took off from there. So the answer to your question is, yeah, we really did believe that it was going to turn into a big company, and but you know, as fate would have it, you know, it lasted. What, 2, maybe 3 years?
Yeah, it was, I guess 2 or 3 years. It was, you know, I know that, you know, they really pushed the Patriot. They thought that was, who I thought was great at the time. Now, what was he like?
He was a great guy, and I wrestled the Patriot several times, not only up for ESPN, but down through Georgia and Alabama, and he was a heck of an athlete.
Now, we just had Mickey Grant on earlier, who was a producer for World Class Championship Wrestling, and we talked a lot about the Sportatorium. And you know, Global ran the Sportatorium, and did that have a special feel, that arena?
That, when I first started wrestling, here's how I got broke in. There was a guy by the name of Mike Padoucis, a Greek guy from Steubenville, Ohio, who happened to come home, and I used my resources because my ethnicity is Serbian, and Serbians and Greeks are very close in likeness, and in that small steel community, I played my influence, and I went to him, and I says, Mike, you got to teach me how to wrestle. I can't, no, you can't. You know, he actually smoked a cigar. That's where I got the cigar from. Uh-huh. Nah, kid, you ain't getting into the business. I ain't letting you get into the business. Bye, bye, bye. You know, come on, so I talked him into it. Well, he lived in Dallas. So I flew to Dallas. I was there for 1 week, and there was another wrestler named Bulldog Plečić who happened to be Serbian. And they, you know, they were with the Sportatorium. They allowed me to come in for 1 week. They tied, so that's where I first stepped into the ring, was the Sportatorium. They taught me how to tie up and take a headlock. They called Gorilla Monsoon, and I had my first match in Pittsburgh Civic Arena with Billy Red Lions in front of 15,000 people, and I didn't know a headlock from a wrist lock.
Are you going to be bringing the Derby to New England Fan Fest?
I'm going to be bringing the Derby. I'm going to be bringing a Bully Vitamin Fortified cigar, and I'm going to be bringing some Bully protein bars too.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. Your current project, would you like to tell people what that's about?
Well, I'm still very active in the fitness and the training, and excuse me. And you know, thank God my health is in great shape again, thanks to the hands of some very capable doctors. I went through an 8-hour, what's called an ablation surgery. And they got my heart beating properly again, so you know, I'm still powerlifting and doing cardio and doing all that good stuff. And when I was working to get healthy through these heart issues, I discovered a amino acid called L-arginine. And so what I did is I have a friend who actually makes 90% of the protein bars in the world. And I said, look, you got to put this in a protein bar. And he said, I can't make that taste good. I said, well, that's your project. So anyway, long story short, we developed a protein bar that has 3 grams of sugar, 20 grams of protein, and 5 grams of arginine. Now, your top energy drink, which uses arginine, only has 1 gram. So it's a niche bar, but it's not your average protein bar. And we're getting, not only are the athletes catching on to it, but oddly enough, a lot of the ladies are using it for a diet bar, and a lot of diabetic people are using it also because they can eat it because it's only got the 3 grams of sugar in it. But, I asked Spanish Bulldog's kid. He's going to be there on June 21st up at the Chrome Plaza. You know, I met him down at a UFC fight expo, fan expo, and, which, by the way, I actually have his picture in my Facebook if any of the fans want to go look at that. When he come up to me, and needless to say, I didn't recognize him. When he told me who he was, it is such, when you think about the guys that have passed, I didn't know the Warrior, but I certainly knew the Bulldog. I wrestled the Bulldog, I don't even know how many times. Mm-hmm. But when you look at that, there's a spot in your heart when you become a certain family with these wrestlers throughout the years, even if you don't know them, but there's a closeness that's hard to describe. So when one of these guys pass away, especially at an early age, I know a lot of the boys really, really take it to the heart.
Yeah. And yeah, did you meet him at all when he was, when he was a little kid, and obviously he would look different.
Yeah, I did. That's the strange part.
Yeah.
I met him. I met Kerry Von Erich's kids. You know, it's amazing. So, you know, when I get in the mirror and curl this handlebar mustache, I say, man, you're getting old, bully.
You still have the mustache.
I still have the mustache.
So,
and I still smoke the cigars.
What do you have a favorite? Is there a specific brand of cigar that you smoke?
My routine daily cigar is a St. Louis Ray 6x60 gauge Maduro. And if it's a special moment, I might fire up a La Gloria 64 gauge Esteli. So there's, for any of your cigar listeners out there, there's your tip for the good cigars.
I will pretend I know what that means. Well, we do actually have he's a great guy. He's actually in the chat room right now, Boxman, and he was very nice and sent me a bunch of cigars. And so I was, there was a former guest on the show, and he's met me, and I took out a cigar, and he's like, "Oh, I didn't know you smoked cigars." And I was like, "Oh, I don't really." And then he looked that I had it in my, I just had it in my pocket, and he just started shaking his head, and he's like, That is not how you properly, you know, carry like a fine cigar. And it was like all dried up, and it was.
Oh, how do you do such a thing? That's blasphemy.
He was not happy.
He was right not being happy.
You go on. I'm sorry.
You don't do that to a good cigar. Now, come on.
I need to be taught the proper way to smoke a cigar.
You could go online and learn anything about anything nowadays. You just gotta determine how much is truth and how much is BS.
Howard Finkel's also going to be there.
Oh, there you go. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was back in the time too. Yeah. I remember him well.
Now, I think that, in my opinion, I think the opinion of most people, the best ring announcer of all time.
Oh yeah, there's not even a question about that. Mike McGurk was up there too, though.
That's good.
Mike McGurk did a heck of a job. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was one of the first to get in there and do that. And then I don't remember, Barney Blackstone, was she before or after Mike McGurk?
That might have been maybe a little bit after, I think, or around the same time.
Hey, you're the host of you're the wrestling host, so you're supposed to know this stuff.
I'm. Awesome. I remember that. I think it might have been about the same time. I remember Michael McGurk, though, on WWF TV.
Oh, Michael McGurk. Michael McGurk was fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And, it's funny because I was just, what really springs to mind is like Bobby Heenan would always, you know, say different jokes about her when she was out there. And Bobby Heenan will actually also be there.
Yeah, Bobby Heenan. Boy, I love Bobby Heenan. What? First of all, as a fan, I love Bobby Heenan. Second of all, you know, I got to know him personally when I was with the WWE, and on a personal basis, he's a top shelf guy.
Yeah. Yeah, he's, I mentioned this on the show before, is he's a guy that can be absolutely hilarious, and then he can also, when he was like the, you know, being a manager, he could also, you know, really make you want to hate him. So he could do the whole spectrum. He's just fantastic.
Well, figure those managers back in the days. You had Captain Lou, you had Classy Freddie Blassie, The Wizard, Bobby Heenan. You know, you're talking about a wrestling era to come up. You know, those guys, that was before cable was around. So in my era when I grew up watching wrestling, Bruno Sammartino's, and I remember when Larry Zbyszko was first introduced, and Larry's going to be there also on June 21st. But I remember when he was first introduced, you know, and Bruno brought him out. So Baron Cicluna, you know, may his soul rest in peace. These were all guys that I grew up with in the business, and I have nothing but the most respect for them because they put up with a young kid who I'd go in the locker room, I'd sit down, I'd shut up, and, you know, the Ken Pateras was in there, the Bob Backlunds were in there, and, you know, I knew what Mike produces and Bulldog Danny Fletcher's told me. I went in, I sat down, I shut up, and I did what they told me to do.
Mm-hmm. How different was the WWF when you went there as Big Bully Busick as the WWF was in the 70s when you were there?
How do I explain this? It was bigger in the sense that TV production was 30 times greater. We were in bigger arenas. We wrestled in Philadelphia. When I first started, we did TV in Philadelphia. And you know, it was more of a auditorium type thing, where you know, when you talk about going into civic centers and places like this where they do TV now, we were doing TV like that when I was there, leaving civic center and all the big places. So there was considerable difference in the programming and everything. So 30 times, if not more, difference in TV back when I first started and now.
Mm-hmm. How are the crowds different for the Northeast? Was it different wrestling in front of a crowd in, you know, in the Northeast in New England as opposed to wrestling in Georgia?
Oh, yeah, there was a big difference. And that was what the wrestling fan had a different mentality in the South as opposed to North. As much as it was different, it was the same, if I could say that.
Yeah. Would you have to?
I don't know how else to explain it.
Yeah. Would you change at all depending on the crowd, or would they just react differently?
Well, every crowd, every night was different. You didn't know what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the old timers, the Jerry Blackwells, you know, Jerry Blackwell is the one who gave me my first push. And so when you wrestled the Jerry Blackwells, the Mr. Wrestling Twos, Abdul the Butcher, Bruiser Brody, Dick Slater was the booker down there. You know, they taught me you've got to get a feel for the crowd, you know. And so that's the way I was always taught. And, you know, you went in where when you work TV, it's a little bit of a different story. You work the camera as opposed to the crowd.
I also want you to Ox Baker, also a user of the Hard Punch over there, and he just beat me up recently in Charlotte. So keep watching.
Well, there's a kid up in Columbus, Ohio. I'm going to give him a little plug, Scott Spears, who's doing some independent TV up there, and
yeah.
Ox is real involved, and I guess Ox is going to do his last match, and I was invited to come up and be his tag team champion, but I'm on the road for work right now, and I couldn't do that, but that would have been a huge honor to go up there, and I mean, look at Ox's mustache and Heart Punch.
Yes. Yeah,
guess what?
I'm a huge fan of Ox Baker. He's a man. He was I was at a horror movie convention just last month, and he was there, and he had this giant crowd there, and these were people that were, you know, movie fans, but they saw Ox Baker, and he had the big facial hair, and he's wearing his furs, and he just drew a crowd. He's got that charisma. He's the man.
Yeah, he does. He absolutely does. And there's a key thing about the charisma. You know, those guys knew how to get the charisma. You know, so they know their stuff, no doubt about it.
Yeah, definitely. And we'll have the link to the website on our website, but it's NEPW, as in New England Pro Wrestling, HOF for Hall of Fame, .weebly.com. And we'll have the link right on the website so you can click on it. It's very easy. And I really
look forward to the fans coming out and seeing that. I know the last one I went to up there, I do have a blast when the fans come through. I really get a kick out of it.
Yeah. You know, when they come and see you, do a lot of times will they, like, remember maybe something that, you know, you yourself, you know, a match or something that you did that, you know, maybe you don't even remember yourself?
I have fans telling me stuff about matches that I was in that I don't remember until they tell me, and I go, oh, my God, you're right. I do remember that.
Yeah.
So that's what I said. The wrestling fan is the greatest fan in the world. They love their professional wrestling.
And there's all different packages you can get on the website. You can get all the way up to the VIP Deluxe package, which includes actually even includes your stay at the hotel, which that's very cool. And so check that out for yourself. There's all kinds of stuff. Even you can get a bikini photo op with Maria. Who wouldn't want that?
Who's some of the female stars are going to be there?
Yeah, Sonny's going to be there. Maria's going to be there. Maria Kanellis, Crystal Marshall, Maxine. Big Billy Music might now buy a VIP pass so you can get the bikini up.
Well, you know, I was just going to say, I think I might be taking some pictures. I might blow my payday and just buy pictures with all the female things, ladies.
Maybe you can make it work out a deal with them, and you can give them a bully bar.
Right, yeah, bully bar or cigar, right?
Exactly. And I actually meant a bully bar. I wasn't making some kind of innuendo there. So. Well, thank you for coming on. It's always fun talking to you.
Well, listen, I appreciate you guys having me. Once again, I want to invite all the fans to come out to the New England Fan Fest 4. It'll be June 21st in Warwick, Rhode Island, at the Chrome Plaza. Come on out and see us, all the stars. Go on the website. I know you guys are going to link the website, so go out and see it. And God bless all the fans and you guys. And I sound like the Iron Sheik there, huh? God bless Vince McMahon and you guys. But anyway, thanks for having me on, and I wish you guys all the best.
Thank you very much.
All right, buddy. Take care.
Yep, you too.
I'm Tatovic the Gamer, and you're listening to IYHWrestling.com.
All right, and we are back here once again. I want to thank Mr. Grant for coming on. We'll thank Mr. Big Bully Busick for coming on. And now we have Joseph Bruin from New England Fan Fest, New England Hall of Fame, and he's going to tell us about the event. How are you doing tonight?
Good. Jackie Jones, one-inch bicep, big fan of the show. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. It was good having you on, and he sets up a lot of cool guests, so thank you very much.
Absolutely, yeah. I listened to the Bully interview, and it came out great. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, he's very fun to talk to. Thanks for setting it up.
Yeah, no problem, man. Yeah, the New England Fan Fest 4, it's coming to the Crown Plaza Hotel, as you stated earlier, Warwick, Rhode Island, and that's on Saturday, June the 21st. The Fan Fest itself, doors open at 8, and it's from 8 to 4. For fans looking to just purchase general admission, they can do so at the door. It's only $15, allows you in. You can browse around, dozens of vendors, merchandise, and whatever it may be. There's also going to be a New England Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, our 8th annual induction ceremony, and that's going to be from 6 p.m. until 9:30 p.m. That'll be in the same hotel in a separate room, and tickets for that is $25, and they'll also be on sale at the door. And Harley Race, former NWA champion, headlining the Hall of Fame this year. It's going to be a pleasure to have him on hand. And, of course, we'll be honoring the late Davey Boy Smith, the British Bulldog, his wife, Diana Hart Smith, and, of course, his son, Davey Boy Jr., Harry Smith, will be there to accept the award. Howard Finkel will be hosting the Hall of Fame ceremonies along with his co-host, Arta Okel of the Baltimore Sun. And we'll also be honoring the late Matt Bourne, Doink the Clown. He'll be inducted into the New England Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame. His family will be there as well. So it really is going to be a special night for us. Of course, former WCW, WWE referee Billy Silverman will also be inducted. Ring of Honor, ROH, ring announcer, sorry, Bobby Cruz will also be inducted. And a whole host of others, Jim the Anvil Neidhart, and really is going to be a great night.
Yeah. Now, we've had, on the show before, Bobby Cruz, and if you're in New England, you've seen Bobby Cruz on Ring of Honor, but a lot of other shows, and he really is one of the better ring announcers, I would say. So it's
absolutely. He does a great job, and he's been doing it for a long time, and it's great to see him in a spot where, you know, he's now full-time on television, and rightfully so.
Now, this is the 8th annual the Hall of Fame class and the 4th annual Fan Fest. So, you know, how did it go from being just the Hall of Fame and then to also becoming a Fan Fest?
Honestly, the way I envisioned it first was basically to honor those in New England who maybe won't get recognized otherwise on a large scale. And what I did in 2008, we actually had 3 mini ceremonies, basically, and they would act as an intermission, I guess you can say, at local independent wrestling shows. And, you know, we'd have a few guys be inducted and give some speeches. It went about 20, 30 minutes, and the fans really got into it. And eventually it was something that I wanted to pursue and basically turn into its own event. So 2009 was the first year that we actually did a Hall of Fame ceremony, at its own event, and really made it something special. And we packed the place with 250 fans the first time and returned in 2010. And I then decided, you know what, let's make it a whole day. There's not much going on in New England as far as fan festivals or anything of that nature. So we made it a full day in 2010, Fan Fest 1 in the morning, and followed up by the Hall of Fame ceremony. And really, it's just turned into a tradition from there. And we have fans come from all over the tri-state area. And we have one gentleman who flies in every year from Tokyo, Japan.
That's pretty wild.
Yeah, so it's a pleasure, and I really enjoy doing it.
Yeah, I like that. You know, you induct you know, guys obviously like Harley Race, and you know huge names to anyone who watches, who knows about wrestling. But you also have guys like, for me, is Duke of Dorchester, Pete Doherty, and you know, Mario Mancini this year. Guys that, you know, if you grew up in this area, you've seen, you know, on TV, you saw the Boston Garden shows and whatnot. And I like that you also recognize these guys.
Absolutely, and that's something, I mean, that's the cornerstone of the New England Hall of Fame, is to recognize the local talent, and obviously sprinkle in some mainstream stars that you all know. But like you said, Duke of Dorchester, Pete Doherty, Mario Mancini, we've got the O'Reilly brothers in there, John Callahan, a lot of talents that you've seen with the WWF, and even so the WWWF. Our first class of the Hall of Fame, you can't really include a New England Hall of Fame without the late Killer Kowalski, Walter Killer Kowalski, and of course the Boston Bad Boy, Tony Rumble. So we certainly started off in a good place, and also the another local great for quite some time anyway in the 80s, Jose Luis Rivera, being inducted this year as well.
Yes, that's really cool. I still actually have, now you can see a lot of them on the WWE Network, but when I was a kid, they used to show the Boston Garden shows on NESN, New England Sports Network, and I would tape them. I still have a lot of them on VHS tape.
Nice.
But I always thought Pete Doherty was a very underrated color man. He did color a few times on the Boston Garden shows. And something I always say, and most people don't know what I'm talking about, but he would they would show the replay, and they would show the heel cheating. And Pete always had this great line to me, and he'd say, "Ah, it's an optical illusion." I just thought that's like the great. That's such a great line. So
he was certainly one of the most entertaining, you know, whatever you want to call it, enhancement talents. That is for sure, and it shows right there. I mean, to put him in a color spot as an enhancement talent, that's got to say something.
Definitely. Now, you mentioned a lot of the guys that are being inducted this year. You want to go over some of the people that they will meet at the FanFest itself?
Absolutely. The FanFest itself, as I said, is from 8 to 4. You'll meet legends like Harley Race, Jim the Anvil, Neidhart, Jose Luis Rivera, Mario Mancini. We recently, tonight actually, just announced the Nasty Boys, Brian Knobbs, Jerry Sags, The Demolition, Axe the Smash coming back. We have Tugboat Typhoon. Scott Hall, the bad guy, Razor Ramon, just added this past week. And, of course, Big Papa Pump, Scott Steiner. We've got the Superfly, Jimmy Snuka. Duke of Dorchester, Pete Doherty, will be doing an hour and a half as himself, and then he'll be dressing up in full Golden Terror attire.
Nice.
So that'll be interesting. And, I mean, you name it, anyone from, like you said earlier, the Divas, Maria Kanellis and Daphne and Maxine, Crystal Marshall, Deborah McMichael, whole host of divas there, and some other local greats like Dangerous Danny Davis, and we have Virgil coming in, of course. What's a convention without Virgil?
Yes.
I
actually like Virgil, so that's very cool.
He's actually a great guy.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think a convention would be complete with Virgil. He certainly marked his place in the wrestling world, that is for sure. And, of course, Men on a Mission, Oscar and Mo will be in the house. Unfortunately, we inducted Nelson Frazier last year into the Hall of Fame. He passed away, unfortunately. But there will be a special tribute of sorts. I don't want to give it away, but involving Mo and Oscar during this year's ceremony. So that'll be something special for sure.
Oscar, a friend of the show, he calls in every once in a while. So he's very cool. And I mentioned Dangerous Danny Davis because you know, you see a lot of the same, you see Sergeant Slaughter and IRS and those guys on WWE TV a lot. But WrestleMania, Dangerous Danny Davis was on there, which I was very happy to see.
Absolutely, yeah. He's one that, like you said, you just don't see often. And another local from Massachusetts, Kenny Dykstra, former leader of the Spirit Squad, will be in the house. Former referee Billy Silverman. And we're actually going to have a pretty cool Q&A session later on in the day. I believe it's around 12 noon, and it's called Reflection. And basically it's four former referees from television. I know Paul Richard, Dangerous Danny Davis, I believe Dave Dwinnell, who used to do a lot of the MSG shows, and, of course, Billy Silverman, as well as Jimmy Corderas, actually. So that's going to be interesting, something special for the fans. And if you purchase a general admission ticket or whatever you might get, the Reflection Q&A session is free to the public. So
very cool. And we'll have the link to the website up on In Your Head, but if you want to check it out, it's at NEPW, as in New England Pro Wrestling, HOF as in Hall of Fame, .weebly.com. And all the information's up there, and all the different tickets you can get. Like you mentioned, you can get, you know, if you want to get the big package, you get everything, you can get that. Or if you just want to come, you know, you can spend $15 and just come to the Fan Fest. So it's exactly. You know, very affordable.
Absolutely.
Depending on how much you'd like to spend. So, yeah, I want to thank you for coming on and talking about it.
Appreciate you having me. Absolutely. Always a pleasure to be here.
Anytime.
What up, y'all? This is Violent J from Insane Clown Posse. And right now, you're listening to In Your Head Radio. Know something about it, bitch.
All right. We're back once again at In Your Head. We want to thank Mickey Grant of WCW. We want to thank the big man, Big Bully Busick himself. He the hard punch, the stump puller, a bowler, cigar, the man, an awesome facial hair. This is a man that I look up to. That is Big Boy Busick. And also, of course, Joseph Bruin of the New England Hall of Fame and New England Fan Fest. Very cool. I want to thank all these people for coming on. And live here next week on the show, I'm very excited about this intro. I don't know if you have you seen this, but Rene Dupree will be here on the show.
Mm-hmm, I caught that. That's the first time we ever had him on, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, awesome.
Very much looking forward to this. I've always been a fan of Rene Dupree. He's a very underrated wrestler. And I recently checked out a shoot interview with him. And the person who did that shoot interview pronounced his name Reini. He's like Cafe Reini. And he had no idea he pronounced Sylvain Grenier. He called him like Greeny.
Has Greeny. Not watched wrestling? I mean,
I was like, how can you interview this guy and pronounce his name Reini? And Rene Dupree he's like, damn, dude, Cafe Reini.
Where'd he get Cafe from?
Well, it was like a segment he did on the show, Cafe Rene.
Oh.
He called it Cafe Reini. It was sad times.
Cafe Reini. It's kind of got a ring to it. Gonna do the Cafe Reini.
Do the Cafe Reini. So anyway, guys, so we're getting a late starter type up the wrestling, but we had some cool guests.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I appreciate it. It's a good time. Yeah. Let's listen to everybody.
So if you guys want to call in right now and talk about the wrestling with us, you can call in 508-644-8503, or you can Skype in Jack and Off.
Yes, sir. This week in wrestling, probably the biggest news. You know, I mean, the Ultimate Warrior passed away last week and everything, but this week, the biggest news, Jack, to hit the wrestling scene was Eric Young winning the belt.
Yep.
You're all about it. I know you were stuck glued to your television.
I didn't see it. I have two things to say about this.
Yeah.
First of all, I really like Eric Young. Mm-hmm. I think he was a guy that would be given crap gimmicks and would do the best with them. And I think anything he was given, he was entertaining. And I actually think he's a guy that had the skills to be your top guy. But he was really at his peak a few years ago. He's not even been on TV. And I understand where people are going to say it's not really the same as Daniel Bryan. But the fact is, you on the week that Daniel Bryan gets the belt, you then have your crazy bearded short guy win a title match at the beginning of the show to go on and win the title at the end of the show. That someone there had to realize, you know what, someone's going to compare this to WrestleMania and Daniel Bryan winning. Maybe we shouldn't do it this week.
You know, I didn't even make, like, the, you know, like, he wrestled a match at the beginning of the show, then he wrestled a match at the end of the show. Mm-hmm. I didn't even make that comparison. But, yeah, it's definitely there. Because Daniel Bryan did the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Man. TNA, it just reeks of desperation.
Yeah, it's lame, because it's like the, I can understand if you really think about it, you're like, well, it's not the same. He's a different type of guy, all these things. He's been the company for a long time, blah, blah. But there's so much to compare to it that someone just, like, looking at the show is just going to think, oh, well, you know, they're just wanting a short bearded guy having the title. It's so similar.
I actually don't mind Eric having it, because he's been with the company for a long time, and I think he deserves it, in a sense. Mm. I mean, why the hell not? I mean, it's TNA. There's nobody's really over. But, you know, if you're looking at people who are, you know, kind of over, I guess you could say Eric Young is.
Yeah, I'm going to say this, too. I don't really like the idea that, like, because you've been in the company a long time, you deserve the title. I don't really. I mean, you should.
What? How else could you decide it though in TNA?
Actually, in TNA, that's a terrible way, because in TNA it should be, let's try to put this belt on somebody that's actually going to get a buzz to our show.
Uh huh. Yeah, but who's in TNA who would do that?
I like Eric Young, but no, not Eric Young. And if you're going to do Eric Young, I actually think you could tell a good story with Eric Young winning the belt, because he has been there for a while. People do like him. He is talented. He is the underdog. But that's another thing with TNA. It's like they tell their stories in one show. It's like, so he's not in the title picture at all. Then all of a sudden, he wins this Royal Rumble and then wins the title all in one show. You're losing the whole point of Eric Young winning the belt, is to tell the story of the underdog rising up and winning the title. If you tell it over a few weeks and actually got people like wanting to see that, maybe you'd have something.
Maybe you would have sold some tickets.
They did that with Gunner. When Gunner had that title shot, they actually showed a really good vignette that actually got me interested in Gunner and like made you want to see him win the belt, but they showed that an hour before he lost the match for the title. So it was completely pointless, because they put that on there to gain interest in Gunner winning the title, and then he lost that same match later that same show. That doesn't make sense. The point of like doing that vignette is to get people to want to see the match, not that match later that same show. You want to build it over a couple weeks. Can't like, oh well, I just saw this, now I gotta tune in later, you know, in a half hour. Like, I'll tune in, you know, next week or in 3 weeks when the show is. But not having the pay per, I know they do like their don't they do like a big show, kind of like a pay per view, but
yeah,
it is just a show that there's, it just seems like there's, it builds to nothing. There is no build. It's just an ongoing show.
Mm-hmm. People need to, like, warn me ahead of time when TNA is going live. Because that's when they do the craziness. That's when they have, like, they change titles or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't keep track of when their show is actually going to go live, because it's, like, every, like, 4 or 5 weeks. It's like, now it's live, and now people are posting about it on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, damn it. Normally all these shows are in a can, but who could they put the belt on that would create some buzz?
No,
maybe,
I see someone here.
Willow?
Give Eric Young some time. It's only been a week. Well, that's the point, though. The point is they put the title on him, right? A few days after WrestleMania, so it just comes off as they're desperate to try to get what they have on WWE. And also, why not give it time to build up to him winning? And Magnus has been just a big total failure as champion. Mm-hmm. Plus, it was booked. It was doomed. It was just like they put the he gets the help from like the entire company to beat a guy leaving the company. And then every match he has, he wins on a fluke, and they call him paper champion. How could they possibly think anyone would get like behind that or interested in that?
Yeah, they're already kind of doing that character already with what's his name, Eric Carter the Third or whatever.
Yeah, his gimmick is that he sucks.
Yeah, so Magnus's gimmick was that he sucks.
Yeah, and the tag champs, their gimmicks is that they're jokes. So all the heels are just pathetic.
Well, you got the Knockouts champion, whoever that is.
Who?
She's not a joke, whoever she is. Who's the Knockouts champion?
Oh, fine. I don't watch it.
I don't even know who it is. And I've watched it. Jeez, who is the Knockout champion? Is it Gail Kim, maybe?
Some woman.
She's no joke, but anyhow. Yeah.
Big Bad Yuri says Bobby Roode's the man. Maybe Bobby Roode's the Knockout champion.
Damn, he's credible.
Do you think this is bad news for Austin Aries now that what's her name is like the booker?
Christy Hemme?
Yeah. Just going to book guys like to rub their junk in his face.
Maybe like she'll just book guys to come out here and just kick him in the junk. And like she's like, I really want you to make it look real. As a matter of fact, make it real.
Got to be real stiff on that nut shot. If you go to TNA Impact Wrestling, it's weird. I guess it's ImpactWrestling.com. I don't know. They never went full into that name change, did they? It's still TNA, but it's also Impact.
It's like they can't drop those terrible letters.
New world champion. It's a picture of Eric Young with a big beard standing next to a redwood tree. This looks like this crazy hillbilly. I don't know. But on the side, it's
next to a tree.
I don't know. He's next to a redwood tree. I guess he's now a lumberjack.
It is. I don't know. I mean, I don't mind Eric having it, but I don't know. It just. I don't know. It's a reason of desperation because it seems like they saw WWE come off of their big week with coming off WrestleMania and all the news that was going on about it. They're like, well, we got to do something, and we got to do something fast. It's like, let's just put the belt on this guy.
Yeah, but. There's new merchandise and a willow umbrella.
Ooh. See? If you need an umbrella, how much is it?
I'm clicking. I need an umbrella last night. I was fucking stoked. We went to Cambridge last night, and, God, it was just raining out, windy, and I was a very soaked man.
Now that umbrella can't be on clearance just yet, though. I mean, he's been only on TV for like 3 weeks.
It's new merchandise.
So that's an expensive umbrella.
I would assume so, yeah.
This is an expensive umbrella. That's my Willow. Is it any good? I can't do a Willow. I just discovered that.
Pathetic.
What the hell is a willow, anyhow? Why does Jeff Hardy want to do it?
I don't know.
Man, good old Willow.
I'm trying to find how much this umbrella is, but computers are not going so well. But there's another huge announcement for Global Force Wrestling.
Oh, yeah, I heard about some of this. Let me hear it.
There's like, I don't know. It's like...
That's the announcement? You're like, yeah, there's a... I don't know.
It's like, I don't get, like, this. How this is announcement. It's like some companies, like, involved. And, like, they're going to produce shows, but there's no... there's no, like, there's no place that has the show. There's...
How about the big announcement about Jeff Jarrett almost beating up like Ian Rotten because he didn't receive all of his payoff?
Really? When was this? When did this happen?
Well, I think it was Ian Rotten. It was like IWA Mid-South or whatever. He was supposed to get like they didn't get all the money out for the advance ticket buys out of PayPal. And like he's like, I just don't have the money right now, so you're just going to have to wait a few days. You got to wait the 3-day transfer day, you know. Period.
Yeah, what's up? Man, Jeff Jarrett's like falling on bad times, though, if he's like working free and rotten.
I will say, though, I guess there isn't anything that's more annoying than doing a job and just having a person be like, well, I'm not going to pay you right now. So, I guess I can kind of understand why you want to beat the dude's ass.
Oh, I don't blame. I'm just saying, it's just kind of like, I would think he'd be doing better than that he'd have to be working for Ian Rotten.
Yeah, I mean, he's starting up a promotion and everything. I mean,
yeah, and Ian Rotten, that's pretty, like, low. So, the umbrella is actually already on sale, but it's $10 off, but it's still $40.
Ultimate Beef here, he's reminding me. He's saying that he actually slapped Ian Rotten's kid. Think about that, Jack. He slapped his kid.
Oh, that's fucked up. I mean, you, whatever. If the guy himself owes you money, you can take it out of him. But to slap the guy's kid, that's...
He's like, give me this little bastard. Not gonna pay me now.
Is that Jimmy James? Is just yawning? He like calls in the show and just yawns. It's like, this is fucking boring. Going to sleep. Playing crickets. So let's see here. Jeff Jarrett's Global Force Wrestling announced that they have signed a deal with 25/7 Productions and Matt Broom, the creator of NBC's The Biggest Loser. No TV deal is in place yet, but 25/7 will be producing GWF TV shows. Broom said in a press release that was only released as a JPEG form. What? It's easy to get...
Why do you gotta bring that up?
I don't know. It's easy to get excited about Global Force Wrestling when you get to know Jeff Jarrett and see his passion. Oh, you're out of here, Jimmy Jam.
Maybe whoever was like transcribing that was pissed just because they couldn't copy and paste. Like, yeah. God damn you and your JPEG.
It's easy to get excited about Global Force Wrestling when you get to know Jeff Jarrett and see his passion and understand his vision. He's eager to bring a new perspective to professional wrestling, and we're eager to help him achieve that goal. The press release also touted how GFW has over 500 talents in their database. The Hollywood Report did an article on GFW and notes that they plan on running 52 weeks per year as competition to WWE and TNA. Jarrett and Broom are currently shopping TV rights to matches, which will air both live and live to tape, as well as unscripted fare. Broom says interest has been high from both major broadcast and cable networks. It just won't be a bunch of wrestling matches. We have exciting announcements to come. TNA or WWE right now is match after match after match. Global Force Wrestling is not going to do that. There will be matches, but there will be a lot more and a lot more variety placed into the actual events that will be really innovative and fresh.
Is he saying it's not going to be total nonstop action?
No, it's going to be matches with 500. They're going to have 500 wrestlers. What kind of roster is that? We go with 500 people. How would you ever get into a show about like that? There's 500 people.
500? How many buses is that?
They're gonna have like 10, like 50 man Royal Rumbles a show.
That sounds terrible.
They can. Why even say that?
Maybe they can switch it up and have the reverse battle royal where you got to fight your way into the ring and then get thrown out.
Yeah, World War 100. 500 man, like 50 ring match, battle royal. That'd be awesome. Uh-huh. Each ring is 10 guys. So they just basically went and hired the PWI 500.
Well, that would be a good way to get, you know, all your talent. I mean, they're already rated and everything. You're just like, well, let's do this guy.
He opens it up. He's like, hire me, these people.
Highlights a few of them.
And the other guy shoots his shotgun in the air, and he's like, hey, yeah! Kill them all! Yeah!
I like your impression of Toby Keith.
America!
Have you ever seen the guy? Do you even know what he looks like?
He was on TNA, I believe, once.
Oh, yeah. Okay. He does other things. I mean, he sings that one song. It's like, How Do You Like Me Now?
How do you like me now?
Yeah, yeah. You know that one.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Love it. He's not shooting his gun in that one.
How do you like me now? You're not a minority.
It's like the easiest lyric ever. It's like, how do you like me now? Now I'm on my way. Word. Word to your mother.
Word to your mother. Bam.
Cool as ice.
Cool as ice.
Anything happen on WWE that's worth talking about?
I don't know. Stuff went down, probably.
Raw tribute. I mean, they had a tribute to the Warrior. That was interesting.
Yeah, I'm. That was very nice. They opened up the show, and it was all about.
They checked off like the criteria to have a tribute to somebody, and they're like, "Did he murder his kid?" And they're like, "No." He's like, okay, he's good then.
No, it was a very nice opening. It was, you know, everyone was out there, and they all, paid tribute to him. The whole roster was out there, and that was nice. Mm-hmm. That was good. It's a nice moment. I thought the show itself was pretty lackluster.
Yeah, you had the Shield getting beat down at the end by a bunch of people, and then. Evolution reformed.
Evolution is a mystery. Make a change is the one seal. God makes a fool out of
you. Where the hell is Ric Flair? He's in Evolution.
Woo! Yeah, I want to see Flair.
That's what I was saying. I was like, where the hell is Ric Flair?
It's weird because Batista now, he's presented as the big guy of the company, of that, not the company, of that team.
Mm-hmm.
He's smaller than, the other two dudes. He's, the smallest of the three.
It's like, he let somebody put Batista in the wash or something. And
mm-hmm. Gotten old.
Yeah.
Huh. What if Batista just, he's like, I'm going to take off. I've got a new idea. Okay. He just stops working out, and he just starts eating, and he comes back as Yokozuna size.
Fat Batista.
So he would be the biggest guy on the show again, but just the, and he still wears...
But he totally reinvented himself.
Yeah, and he still wears the skinny jeans,
mm-hmm.
dressed like a douchebag, but he's, just giant. That'd be awesome.
Could he be a fat Willow?
Yes, he could be the fat Willow.
Awesome.
But I like Batista better as a heel, I will say. And I don't mind he Batista and Orton together. I like the Batista bomb into the RKO. I think that's a good move.
Has been good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Kevin says, I do not want a Evolution reunion.
Too bad you're getting it. It was on Raw.
I don't mind it.
The Evolution DVD is on its way.
Well, how does that... I think it's Evolution's
Mystery. Evolution Mystery. Never name me, me, me.
I don't think that's it.
I don't think...
Well, I did better than Lemmy, I think.
I don't think it's Hibba Dibba Doota.
That'd be great if he does that at WrestleMania. He's like, it was a mystery. Hibba Dibba Dibba Doota.
Well, if he did at WrestleMania, it's probably would go.
He's like, what is the lyrics to this song? I wrote it. I can't remember it.
God. Evolution is a mystery, full of changes no one sees. A clock makes a fool of history. That's obvious.
Man. Awesome.
I'd sing the whole song, but it's bad for my throat.
You need to get some, like the Barney Fife ad. Get you some honey and water mixed together and get you, like, the sprayer to spray it into your mouth.
What I understand, the guy from AC/DC and other singers, they say drinking milk is good before a performance.
Huh. I got some milk for you, Jack.
Yeah, you're probably milking your boobs right now.
How did you know?
Probably lactating.
No, I'm taking that drug that's on advertised on TV. It's like, your child may develop breast in males. It's like, Jesus Christ, if there's anything, you know, kids are staying away from, it's definitely that drug. It's like, the side effect is you might develop breast.
Mm-hmm. Some people might like that. I don't know. You think that will ever be a fad in America where, like, the men start getting breast implants?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, there are males who do want breasts, but...
Uh-huh. Maybe someday, though. Maybe someday you'll be walking around and you see these damn kids. They all got their boobs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, things change.
Instead of, like, they're busting a sag, it turns into everybody has breasts.
So, yeah, what happened on Raw? I can't. I just remember not being too good.
Yeah, there wasn't a whole lot of goodness about it.
Oh, they had a tournament for the which is, in theory, cool, a tournament. But it's like for the Intercontinental Championship number one contender. And it's like, Big E loses on the show every week, all the time, in tag teams, single matches. He's presented as nothing. Then just all of a sudden in 1 week, like, now we're supposed to care about the IC title and have, like, this big, long tournament to see who gets to face Big E for it. When the guy was, who, no one, him not, no matter what I think of Big E, they have not done a good job at building him as an IC champion that you care about. So to just do this tournament out of the blue for number one contendership, it just seems very odd.
That it does. I was kind of hoping when Cesaro won and then they brought out Jack Swagger, I was kind of hoping he would have won his match. I would have liked to seen a matchup between Cesaro and Jack Swagger.
Yeah, it's very strange because you think the way they would have booked the tournament either end with those two or at least have those two face each other later on, but I think they're going to keep those guys away because I really think it's weird because it's like, I don't know if they want Cesaro as a babyface or a heel.
Yeah, and to Paul Heyman coming out and just talking about Brock Lesnar so much. And
yeah, it's very odd because I think he could be a really big babyface, but they do a lot of stuff that also, you know, designed to get people to boom. I don't know, quite get it.
It is not a pairing. I mean, if Heyman could come out and try to get him over as a face, I guess. But you always said that, like, face managers never work, so.
Yeah, you know what? I think they would actually cheer Heyman just because he's so good.
Yeah.
He's a good talker. I don't know. It's just odd. It's odd. But
the King of Swing, Jack. You like that name?
No. No. I don't like that name at all. I think it's terrible.
Do you imagine people in with poodles on their dress kind of dancing in the funky way? Kings of Swing.
Kings of Swing. Jimmy Jam loves it. Jimmy Jam says it rocks his world. It rocks his world just like the Brooklyn Brawler Steve Lombardi rocked the world of Pat Patterson in the great song Push It and Pull It by Kamala.
There you go. Anytime that I'm doing the show and I think I'm off, I think I'm having a bad day, I'm like, I'll just go to my barometer, Jimmy Jam. If there's a smile on Jimmy Jam's face, I know that I'm doing right. Thank you, Jimmy Jam.
If you really break that song, that Kamala song down, Push It and Pull It.
God. I think we've done that several times here on the show, haven't we?
The one thing about it, I'm not sure happened, is he says that Steve Lombardi tells Pat Patterson he's going to rock his world. I just don't see that as a phrase that Steve Lombardi would use. The rest of it, I think, is accurate, but I don't know. Can you really see Steve Lombardi saying, I'm going to rock your world before he goes in to sodomize Pat Patterson?
I guess stranger things have happened.
It's a weird song.
Push it and pull it.
I don't mean to hurt nobody.
I've only talked shit about you the entire song.
Love that song.
It's just all in good fun.
God, Kamala's good. I wish he'd put out some. I don't know, maybe he has more music out, but I think a lot of it's just kind of like, it's a nice day, it's sunny out. But I want to hear about either making love in the rocking chair or like talking about other wrestlers. That's the kind of music I want to listen to.
Mm-hmm. Don't know what his next ballot could be about, but I'm sure he could think of something.
Mm-hmm. I recently sent that song to someone. Oh, it was Ed Gonzalez. And the video, and he said that his direct quote was like, I'm happy to be in a world where this exists.
Sometimes there's just so much beauty in the world, it fills my heart up as if it was about to burst.
Maybe I'll just start making my own Kamala songs.
But then it wouldn't be a Kamala song.
Yeah, I'll just say it is.
No. I will call you out on it.
What? I'm like the Cape Cod Kamala.
Yeah, I guess that's what the people at the Mongolian Grill says.
The Mongolia? I don't go to Mongolia.
What the hell's the grill you go to?
Brazilian Grill.
The Brazilian Grill. He's like the Kamala of Massachusetts. Do you kind of like peep out of the plants before you eat your meat? Pat your belly afterwards? I can see you doing that.
I like Kamala. Alright, Incher.
Yes, sir.
So that's Kamala. Rusev, he squashed some dude.
Ain't that guy anymore.
Xavier Woods, he's just a total bum.
He's a bum.
Mm-hmm.
Send him back to the Bush Leagues.
Man, they were really pushing this guy for a while. They were like, this guy's got like a PhD, and he's like curing cancer, and he's just this genius, blah, 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 and he's stealing everyone's music, and the girls with the asses, and he's just doing it up, and no one gave a shit, and now he's just a total loser.
Yeah.
Total bum. They killed off Sweet Tea and the dancing goof there. Killed them off for this guy.
It'd be Brodus Clay, Jack.
Brodus Clay. They killed him off to killed them off for this man. It was not worth it. At least fans actually did cheer for Brodus Clay.
Yeah. That he come out and he'd do the crazy dance that he'd do, and people kind of liked it. Xavier Woods, what have you done for us? Nothing.
Fucking. You know what? That's a guy. It's funny, though, because it was the Rocky IV villain destroying the Rocky I villain.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. I guess they just decided to work that in on television.
This is actually, I think that he's the guy that TNA did better.
Yeah. As best as they can do.
Yeah, I think he was better there. He's better than WWE.
You had a title defense by Paige taking on Alicia Fox.
I like Paige.
Like them all. I like that ass. I'll never pass.
What do you think about this guy? He really reminds me of not Paige, but the Rusev guy.
That's
really,
not a guy at all.
He just
that's
looks,
what I think.
Really reminds me of Taza the Greek. If Taza would just like start eating a lot of
just start fucking juicing. Like he'd have to. I mean, how big would that syringe have to be?
Oh, come on! We all know that Tasso's had bigger things shoved up his ass.
Why's Tasso catching shrapnel?
What?
Why is he getting shrapnel now?
He likes it. He likes the attention.
I mean, he's kind of built like, if you imagine, like, Christian off the roids. That's about Tazo's size. It's just like this little string bean.
With a little pot belly.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a guy at the bus at a South Station last night. Looked like Tazo, but like a clean version.
And he was at the bus station.
Yeah.
A clean this, version of Tazo.
I got to tell this story. Was at the bus. I was last night. I went to the movies and went to karaoke with Annabelle. And I was coming home, and then
you sing anything?
I did not. She did. Yes, she lambasted me for not singing. But so it's going up the. I was getting off South Station. We took the T. She gets off the difference. Anyway, I was coming up, and it was totally closed off. And there was just this guy standing there, a black guy. Now, I'm not racist, but just this random black guy.
That's not the first time somebody said that to me today.
And he's just like, go down that hallway and take the elevator. And I was like, okay. So I go down this like long hallway, and it twisted like several times. Seriously, it was in the basement of South Station, T Station, the subway. People not in New England doesn't know. T is a subway. And so I'm down in the basement of the subway, just walking down this long hallway that keeps taking all these turns. I'm like, is this legit? What the hell's going on? And then I heard somebody walking quickly behind me and came up. And it was this older guy, like probably in his 50s. This was late night, 11:30 at night, last bus, 11:50. And, and he had like a tie and he's gray hair. And I was like, I don't know if this is legit. And he's like, yeah, I don't know. So anyway, so we found the elevator, and it was a service elevator. So we get in, we're like, I don't know, where are we going? Like, because they had like all these like offices and stuff. It wasn't like a regular elevator that people use. So anyway, we hit one, so we got there. And then, so anyway, the weird part.
It was a reptilian elevator?
Service elevator.
No.
No, it wasn't the elevator that, like, you know, for the regular customers.
You said regular people.
Well, yeah, it's for the workers. Okay, so anyway, And then so the guy, he looked at me. He's old, like I said, older guy, gray hair, gray beard, like a dress shirt and a tie. And he's like, do you want to go to a party tonight? And I was like, what? He's like, oh, we have a get together every year at midnight on April 15th. And he's like, and I was like, no, I got to go home. And he's like, well, we also have a get together every year on October 15th. And I was like, okay. And he's like, do you know the significance of that? And I was like, no. And he's like, well, if you put in your extension for your taxes, the deadline is October 15th. And I was like, okay. And so then we got off the elevator, and I was walking my way. And he's,
you're not getting off this elevator till you blow me.
And he's like, Corey, you don't want to come? It'll be fun. We're gonna have drinks and then food. And I was like, no, thanks. And he's like, okay. And I was just like, who has a party on tax day? Like, that's their annual party. Is it like an accountant party?
You know, you would have showed up to that party, and it would have just been you and him eating chips. He's like, not much of a turnout.
This is like the nerdiest party of all time. It's like we're having a party on the tax deadline at midnight. Oh, God. I'm just inviting a random guy on an elevator? It's weird. Sorry, it didn't have much of a payoff because I didn't go. I might not be here if I win. I don't know. Let me hit.
It was like really the big payoff.
It might have been him and like Erwin R. Scheister.
Arn come in. Cat bath.
Arn Anderson.
That is a strange way of saying the things. Cat bath.
Mm-hmm. I've been told that my tongue is rough like a cat's tongue.
Is that what the dude on the elevator told you afterwards?
Something my dentist told me.
Oh, that's how you pay for them. Ah.
There was another time, actually, we were at, Annabelle and I were at the Friendly Toast in New Hampshire, and we were talking, and there was a guy behind us, and he just, like, started, he's like, oh, I love you guys. You guys are awesome. We're like, thanks. And we're sitting on the same side of the table. So our backs were to him, and he's, like, looking over the table, and over the seat, and he's kind of drunk or whatever, and he's like, oh, you guys want to come and hang out on my boat? Like, what? He's like, you guys, I love you guys. You guys can come out and spend the night on my boat. And he's like, I got cocaine. Like, oh. So I assume I probably would have ended up dead, and she probably would have been raped and killed if we would have went on the cocaine boat.
Or the other way around.
Maybe. Now I'm rethinking the deal. I should have done it. No, but it was very funny and very weird. So there you go.
Did Jack Swagger come out of anywhere and just powerbomb somebody?
He did not.
People are wondering, what show am I listening to?
I'm sorry, should we talk more about you defecating at the Wendy's? Is that more wrestling-oriented?
No, not necessarily. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily.
Who'd Rybacksel beat?
Rybacksel, they beat, jeez. Who did they beat?
Did they beat the Rhodes?
They might have.
Why did the Rhodes went from being, like, one of the coolest acts in the company to just, like, nothing?
They must have pissed somebody off. What did they do?
I don't know.
It's like, you kick that turnbuckle, I'll bury you. How dare you get pissed off after your match.
Very weird.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Sandman says in here, and I think this should be like a PSA, murder and rape is not a fun time. I do want to say here, we don't condone murder and rape on In Your Head.
No. Excellent.
The rape part. Yeah. I'm kind of on the fence on that. But the murder, unless they deserve it. So, I don't know. I'm taking that back. So, Incher, we talked about TNA, we talked about WWE, the Raw.
Thoroughly, yes.
Thoroughly. All right, so you guys want to call in 508-644-8503, and we got a couple people in the line right now. We've got Shaheen, what's going on? He might just be listening to the show. We got,
Hello.
I'm here. What's up, guys? How's it going tonight?
Jimmy, I wouldn't be happier if I was,
Oh, jam out of jam! Oh, hear about a ha! Oh, hear about a ha! Oh, jam out of jam!
Been watching everything between Raw, SmackDown, and everything on the network.
Jimmy Jam said, give me everything tonight, WWE Network. I'm going to watch it all.
Just been watching everything.
You've been catching up with the Ultimate Warriors tribute stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're telling me they're playing his DVD earlier or something like that?
That was last night for his greatest matches. Some of those matches were off the DVD.
Yeah. I don't think they would play the old DVD, but the...
No, they were playing the one that just came out.
Okay. Huh. Man. They're releasing all the good content on the WWE Network. And what comes out tomorrow, Jimmy Jam?
Part three of Warrior Stuff and Legends House.
Legends House. I'm going to be tuned in for that one. I must watch the Legends House.
You'll tune in, Jack, or you'll be busy doing Without Your Head?
No, I will not be doing Without Your Head tomorrow night. But for people in the know, starting next month, we will be doing Without Your Head every week.
Every week. Every week. Thursday night.
And for people interested as well, in June I will be at the Bazaar Atlantic City, and I will be doing their panels. So I'm looking forward to that.
Does that make you a panelist?
It makes me the panel host.
Oh, hostess with the mostess.
That's right, boy.
Word to your mother.
So, Jimmy Jane, are you looking forward to the Legends House?
Yes, I am.
Inchman, are you looking forward to the Legends House?
No.
What?
I'm looking forward to it. I'm just yanking your chain, buddy.
Legends House.
Don't tell people about that.
I see so many people shitting on this that didn't even start yet. And they're like,
you're like, I hate it already.
I'm wanting to watch it. And then, like, I see Dave Meltzer and Alvarez like, this is, like, the dumbest show ever. I want to watch me.
What does that sound like? That's exactly what I sound like.
No. What is
let's watch Total Divas.
I don't see how you can love Total Divas and not even want to watch the Legends House.
Yep, I want to watch Legends House.
You can still watch both. They're just on different days of the week.
Exactly. Yeah, one's for men and one's for the gays and the women. I'm just kidding, Incher.
Hmm?
Roadhouse, that's a good movie. Legends.
I did a thing with Facebook.
You know who's on page at Extreme Rules.
Hang on, Jimmy Jam. I did this thing on Facebook, and it was like the worst movies that you've seen. Click them all off and all that. And Roadhouse was one of them. And you know what wasn't on that list, Jack? Dirty Dancing.
Yeah, that's because it was made by fags.
Well, that's highly controversial. Alrighty, Jimmy Jam, what were you saying?
Dirty Dancing, even people like it. No, that's a terrible movie.
I don't know. I'd say it's better than freaking Roadhouse.
No. Do you like cry when you're watching it?
Yeah. I'm like, yeah, it's so beautiful.
Yeah. Don't put baby in a corner.
Yep.
Do you and Dwayne get together and watch that every weekend?
Well, we need to do that if we ever get together at the Fan Fest. We need to have a Dirty Dancing viewing.
Roadhouse, he rips a man's heart out.
I know, but it's so strange. Yeah. It's like, at first, he's like this fun-loving bouncer kind of guy. He's like, I'm going to teach you all how to bounce this place. And then all of a sudden, he's ripping a dude's throat out. It's like, where the hell did that come from?
Yeah, that's badass. You're like, why don't you dance?
Jack.
I actually did a duet.
Just a fool to believe I have anything she needs. She's like the wind. Does that prove my point? You're speechless now, aren't you?
I thought I was doing the show with Maine.
You're doing the show with not just a man, but a god.
I am the god of pod. You know what?
What?
I'm not going to do podcast. I do the godcast. I'm a godcaster. I did a duet once of the song from
what?
From
Dirty Dancing?
Yeah.
Oh no. All right, so you don't have any ground to stand on with this argument anymore.
Time of my life.
Nah.
Want to hear it?
No, nah, not really.
What? Can you hear that?
Nope.
Can you?
Nope.
Can you hear that?
Nope. This has turned into a Sprint commercial. Can you hear me now?
Alright, I won't play it. God,
I honestly couldn't hear it. And if you don't believe me, listen to the audio.
Alright, I'll just post it here.
Oh god, I can't wait to go to Fan Fest and lean over your underwear. Lean over your underwear and make you wonder. Nasty things. That wasn't Will Bozarf, it wasn't One Inch Biceps, and it wasn't President Clinton.
I did not say that statement.
And it wasn't Duckman.
You just misquoted me.
Oh, okay.
And I'm not going to say which name you misquoted. Because one of those names was the person.
Uh-oh. It was me. No, it actually wasn't. Just go back and listen last week. And the name that I said that wasn't there last week, it just might.
You'll become more giant. All right, Jimmy Jam, so what's going on besides everything?
We have a new number one contender for the Divas Champion.
Who's that, Jimmy Jam?
Tamina Snuka.
Tamina Snooker. Tamina Snooker, she is going to snooker that page out.
It was a good Divas Battle Royal last night on main event.
You damn Skippy. Who was in this Battle Royal, Jimmy Jam?
Some of the Divas from Total Divas.
Hell yeah, I like the Divas from Total Divas.
Mm-hmm.
Are they ever going to have a total, like, dudes show? It'll be about, like, the guys that date the divas. Or it'll just be about, like, Darren Young's boyfriend.
Total dudes.
They have total divas, it should be. Tim, for the guys, it'll be total superstars.
Total dudes.
I think if that show existed, it'd just be me and Jimmy Jam cruising for babes.
I like Grease. Is someone bashing Grease here in the chat room?
Grease
is the word that you heard. It's got groove, it's got mean, and bam, 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 bam. Oh, Grease is a time, is a place, is a notion. Oh, Grease is a way we are feeling. That's an awesome movie. It's good too.
Beauty school dropout. Go back to high school. That's actually my least favorite part of that movie.
I remember the name of that restaurant.
What was it, Jimmy?
Johnny's Garlits.
What?
He's
Johnny's Garlits.
He's busting out some Grease trivia here.
Grease lightning.
Go Grease lightning. No, 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 no. Grease lightning. Go Grease lightning. Is there any wrestlers in Grease?
Well, they did have that Greaser tag team could have been in it.
Yeah, that's true.
That's why you think the Buck Winchester will come back to the show now that Rene Dupree's on?
He just might. We need to get Deuce and Domino on, and he'll come right back on.
Mm-hmm. We need to have all three of Long Resistance.
Well, to me, it's just him. Screw those other guys.
You're not a Rob Conway fan?
He's fine, but he's more... I think Rob Conway's more his own guy than La Resistance.
Who's the other dude in La Resistance?
Sylvain.
Sylvain Grenier.
Oh, that's it.
We had him on the show.
Cool.
I made a really gay banner when he was on.
I made her really gay banner. I made her
purposely look very, like, homoerotic. Which I do things often to amuse myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you've noticed that.
No, I never crossed my mind, man.
But I actually do like Rene Dupree. I'm looking forward to that. All right, Phineas.
Oh, J Bottom Pain, where bottom her, whatever the heat,
Think Incher.
I'm thinking that he's Jimmy the Jam, hibbity ha ha.
Alright, how about Shaheen? What's going on in his mind?
Hey, how's it going, man?
There he is!
There you go, man. Oh, man, I was happy about wrestling last week, but unfortunately I can't say the same this week.
It wasn't too swinging.
Yeah, it just went downhill, man. It's still better than it was before, but yeah, I don't know.
You didn't have to look forward. Like, oh, man, all stuff's happening. Like, it really, like, made you, like, a positive for the future of wrestling. But this week, it's kind of just like, eh. It's kind of happened. Not like the worst thing I ever saw, but didn't really have, it was, I didn't have me, like, pumped. Intra, where was your pump level?
My pump level.
Pump up the jam, pump it up.
Probably just a one pump.
One pump. One pump and done.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I wasn't very excited about it. I mean, I missed the first 2 hours, but just reading from the results just seemed pretty crappy. Especially Cena, man, when he came out, like, I don't know, man. The jokes that he was making, like, that's the exact type of shit that I hate.
That was terrible. It's like they have, you know, a chance to actually have, like, a interesting feud here. Bray Wyatt, he's been great. I think he's really been great. And he's out there doing this promo, and then Cena just comes out like a total goofball and making, like fat jokes and, like, posting pictures of him like a woman. It's like, this is just lame. Terrible stuff.
Did you like his one joke about, like, when Bray Wyatt said, like, he'd give him a push off of, you know, like a cliff or something? He's like, nobody in the WWE audience wants to see me get a push.
That was cute.
Yeah, I like that. That was brilliant.
Yeah, but did you oh, man, look at that. He's got a picture of Bray Wyatt.
Yeah.
With a woman, as a woman. That's hilarious.
Pacing his head on a baby. Like, come on, man. I mean, it's not funny. I mean.
No, it's done. And what's he doing? Just sitting back there in Photoshop?
Yeah. And people are comparing him, saying, you know, Rock and Chris Jericho used to do this kind of stuff, but they were funny. This guy just isn't funny. He's corny as shit, man.
Years ago. But now it's, and it doesn't fit this, like, feud either.
It is strange.
Now, I've done Photoshop in my past.
That's the line of work I'm in now. And surprising, I don't know, man. For WWE, you would think they would do a better job and at least make it funnier. I mean, the Photoshop.
I don't think WWE could do Jack's ideas, though. It's like, he's like, let's have Bray Wyatt blowing Jake Roberts in a teacup.
I don't know about that, but, you know, make it a little bit more complicated than just pasting his head on a baby, you know?
Yeah,
it
was just stupid.
It's terrible. I think Bray Wyatt, though, he kind of pulled it back, though. He's having to work hard to, like, get those Cena promos into line, you know? It's like, he's like, let's get this serious for a minute. But it doesn't help him, for sure. It hinders him.
Did you like the Photoshop? Well, I mean, oh, man. Did you like the photo I took of you with the Nintendo cartridges that time?
Oh, man.
Yeah, good stuff. I had this giant body. And the dude who I was in there with kind of looked like me.
Excuse me.
Oh, my God. Oh, man, I lost my train of thought, man.
Yeah, you could have had at least, like, had Arn Anderson talk about a cat bath with Bray Wyatt.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be comedy. Yeah. Sting made his debut on WWE programming.
Yeah, that was terrible too, man. That pissed me off.
Well, what show was it on? I haven't actually watched much on the network this week.
It was on, I guess I didn't see it, but it was on the, during like one of the tributes to Ultimate Warrior.
Mm-hmm.
And they had Sting up there talking, which is nice, but at the same time, it's like he's never been in the company ever, and that's like the way he's going to date the. You only have one shot to make your first appearance ever, and that's the first appearance ever. Just Sting sitting there.
Well,
you gotta watch
Warrior only dies once.
Yeah, son. Well, you know, though, like Undertaker, they don't even have him go out for when people dying stuff.
Did you see that fake report saying that The Undertaker was dead?
No.
Yeah, some stupid news site released it, just saying The Undertaker was dead. I read it on Facebook. I was like, what the hell? And it was like, there's no way it was real. I just don't see how people can try to, you know, do stuff like that.
Well, he is undead.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the Sting tribute, it was also like literally probably like 20 seconds long. I mean, you invest money in this guy, and this is how you bring him in. Just make a 20-second vignette for Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think they should have saved his appearance for something. Not that this isn't special or worthy or something, but first storyline-wise, something special.
I mean, honestly, if they were going to bring him out for Warrior, wouldn't it just make sense just to bring him out on Raw? They already, I mean, if they were trying to save him, and make it look like they didn't sign him yet, they wouldn't put him on the network. So, I mean, I don't know. Might as well just bring the guy out on Raw.
They don't want to waste him. He'd come out and just go, "Whoa, Stinger Splash!" Whoa, and that's about it.
Who does Sting work with when he comes in now? If Undertaker's out of the picture,
I don't know. Let's have him work with Sheamus.
Nah, man, they would never do that.
Just pulled a name out of a hat.
Sting would even do that, man.
I don't know. Who would you have him work with, Jack?
I don't know. That's why I'm asking.
I'm putting you on the spot, bitch.
Ric Flair, asshole.
That's been done before.
Yeah, I don't care. Not in WWE. All right.
The
only one
that's his best opponent of all time.
They could do Triple H. They could do Triple H.
Triple H and that'd be all right. Triple H and Sting. I'd see that. That could be good. Inch Daddy?
See him against Cena.
Yeah.
I don't want to see that.
Yeah, I don't really see that. I don't think that'd be... Yeah. I think Triple H and Sting could be good, though. What do you think, Incher?
It'd be good stuff. I'm sure Triple H, they could work out something pretty good with it one another.
Kane?
Well, Kane's going to put the mask back on.
Yeah. That'd be all right. Kane and Sting. Where is the devil's favorite demon? That is not a question anyone would ever ask someone. He's like, I'm not
very happy about that. At least he's dropping that stupid ass you know, gimmick though. But I'm not looking forward to a Kane push though.
Yeah, me neither. God damn, how many Kane pushes were we gonna ever see? Intra loves the corporate Kane, though.
Oh, man. It's Dave Meltzer, man.
I kind of like him. He just comes out and he's in the suit.
Why would you like that?
I don't know. I mean, he's better than just normal old Kane. I mean, I'm amazed at Kane fans.
Yeah. I thought I loved Kane.
I don't love him. I mean, he's all right. He's just there, you know? I mean...
OXD's a huge fan.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm surprised there is, like, a girl out there that's just like, I'm a big Kane fan. I was like, huh.
This is Big Red Machine.
Yeah, I know. That's who I'm talking about. I don't know. He seems like a pretty just average guy, you know?
You think she got, like, all moist when he picked up the mask?
She might have. Mm-hmm. I mean, I ain't got nothing against her or nothing, but I just, I don't know. I don't see much special there.
I'm going to put a Kane mask and go over to England.
Something tells me you're going to have to hit the weights before you do that.
I just put on a suit.
Just the big muscle suit. Kane mask. Yeah.
I look different than I do on TV. And like Redman throw a fireball.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be in Lex Flynn.
I don't think he got too much longer to wrestle. I'm pretty sure he's going to retire soon.
I hope so.
Well, sounds like you're quite the Kane fan.
Nah, he's all right. Yeah, I actually totally agree with that statement. He's just there.
Yeah, he might as well retire, man. Cena, they all might as well just retire. These fucking guys just...
Oh, Cena's not going away, dude.
Man, he needs
staying forever.
Oh, my God. I've never hated a wrestler as much as I hate this guy, honestly. I can't wait till he gets older so I can see him at one of these conventions so I can just flip his merchandise table. That's like my goal in life right now.
Go see me, bitch.
Just run up there, flip the table, and leave. Fuck this guy.
Would you do that to any other wrestler?
Probably not, man. Just him.
Why would he have a Cena merchandise table, like jean shorts?
he's got merchandise up the ass. He's got he's got hats. He's got shirts. He's got wristbands. He's got gnomes. Lawn gnome, piggy banks, CDs, probably like a kite. Get your John Cena kite.
Sells moccasins. What wrestler has moccasins, man? CM Punk have those?
I kind of want a pair just because they're so strange. It's just
how much do you have a lot of Cena merchandise?
Me?
Yeah.
No, I don't actually have. Let's see. I guess the closest thing to Cena merchandise that I have is Johnny Fabulous T-shirt. Is that even close?
I guess. His semen created him.
That's right. And the shirt, too.
It created the shirt? What?
With his semen.
You must have a special shirt.
How many shirts do you think he had?
Oh, my God. He's got, like, every color of the rainbow.
Yeah. He doesn't
have a rainbow shirt.
He's gonna have that for like gay pride and all that.
Mm-hmm.
That's his next support movement, man. He does everything like politically correct.
Do you think anyone buys those pink shirts that they have for breast cancer?
No.
I just can't picture anyone buying them. Let's see here. Currently, they have a John Cena "You Can't Stop Me" T-shirt for men, women's, and kids. Then they've got a package where you get the shirt, a hat, wristbands, a headband, and a necklace. They got the hat, they got the wristbands, headbands, necklace itself. They've got a John Cena rally towel.
Oh, boy.
Who buys this shit, man? My God. Oh, my
God. You can get an even stronger T-shirt. You can get the Never Give Up long sleeve shirt or the hoodie. You can get a yellow T-shirt, a blue T-shirt, a black hat. You can get the John Cena Superstar DVD. You can get the John Cena Experience DVD. You can get the John Cena gift card. You can get John Cena rubber bracelet.
What's the John Cena gift card good for?
For Drop Zone merchandise.
Oh, okay. I thought it was just like, buy anything off John Cena.
The John Cena 10-year strong standee.
Go from like lowest to highest and see what's the lowest price on a John Cena item?
Hello?
You there? Can you not hear me?
You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yep. I hear you now.
Okay. Can you go from like lowest to highest and see what's the lowest item on John Cena's list? Like, what's the less you can pay for a John Cena item, and what is it?
Alright. The lowest is the rubber bracelet.
Oh, my goodness.
And then the neon rubber bracelet.
I was hoping for something a little bit better than that. Just a rubber bracelet?
Yeah. Then there's the 10-year strong koozie.
What the hell is that? What's a koozie?
To put your beer can in.
Man.
Then there's the neon rally towel. Then there's the John Cedar, Cena DK Reader book, level 2.
A what?
I don't know. DK Reader book. I guess you like you learn to read.
What's a DK Reader book?
Second edition. I don't fucking know. The John Cedar slam figure.
Oh my god, man.
John Cena collection DVD. The John Cena baseball cap. John Cena magnet.
The magnet's higher than all of these?
Yeah, it's $7.99.
For a fucking magnet? All you do is just put it on your refrigerator?
Mm-hmm.
What? For a magnet, WWE. A magnet. It's magnetized? I mean, why are you charging so much for the damn thing?
The iPhone case. The authentic in your strong shirt in blue or yellow. They're both on clearance for $10. Gift card. The never give up shaker bottle.
The never give up shaker bottle. So you're just supposed to shake it forever?
Yes. The never give up sports towel.
Awesome.
Never give up pants.
Never give it up.
Well, they're youth pants, so I hope not.
There you go.
John Cena Experience DVD. Sweatband set. The neon pendant. HLR special edition t-shirt. Never give up mug. 10-year strong golden t-shirt.
Yeah.
The vinyl pop figure.
The vinyl pop figure?
Yeah, just looks retarded.
Oh.
I don't know. It's like the John Cena with giant eyes. Like a Koopy doll. John Cena never give up long sleeve tee. John Cena seal of approval. Pink tee. The John Cena you can't see me dog leash.
Why? Why wouldn't anybody want that?
That's $20.
Fucking your dogs with John Cena tags on them, man. Jesus Christ.
John Cena, the champ is here. Toddler tee.
Oh my gosh.
John Cena. Hey.
You're setting that kid up for failure, man. Good God.
Neon baseball cap. Rock vs. Cena once in a lifetime DVD. The John Cena bleacher creature.
That's what I need.
The John Cena neon plush monkey.
Oh, you'll go bananas for John Cena.
I'm going to post this one in the chat because it's crazy. It's just a green monkey. Why? What's that got to do with John Cena?
Let's see it.
Oh my god.
How do you think this guy's going to be portrayed in like 20 years when,
like that monkey's pretty slamming though. He looks kind of like an old man. He's got white hair. I kind of like that monkey.
I don't understand.
I don't either, but.
Why is there a green monkey with white hair? Not seen it. Who made that? Why would who went to him like we really need a plush monkey? Make it green.
It's pretty awesome.
Some more shirts. Another shirt. You can't see me shirt. Here we go. John Cena. You can't see me dog collar. That one's $25.
Jeez.
More shirts. WrestleMania shirt. Blu-rays. The Never Give Up Gym Bag.
Excellent.
The John Cena Button Boots.
Button Boots?
Yeah, you can get some boots. You want some... You want boots, Cincher?
No, I'm good.
you wear boots.
I've got a pair that I've been trying to break in forever, but
that's you're the boot man.
The boot man. His shoe fell apart. I couldn't stop laughing.
For 10 years.
I just start laughing all day.
John Cena 10 years strong standee.
I wish I wouldn't have stopped you from filming then. I don't know. I was just kind of embarrassed. I was like, man, this guy's just laughing his head off. I feel like an idiot standing here. Now Jax wanted to film me.
I'm just seeing this monkey. Why? Like, I don't understand. How does this relate to John Cena? Like, what? Why?
Because you can spank John Cena's monkey.
Oh, my God. I'm pass on that, man.
You can't see me flex watch, black, white, or gold. You can't see me dog package.
The what? Dog package?
It's both the collar and the leash for your dog.
Oh, okay.
Shirt package, never give up pullover hoodie, the 31-inch deluxe John Cena action figure. Oh, my God, you should see this. The John Cena finger ring.
Excellent.
It's just the ring of John Cena's head. So
what
stupid.
I mean.
It's only $50.
What? $50?
Oh my God. I'm posting it in there for you, Inch Man. Fleece jacket. Youth package.
He kind of looks like Frankenstein or something. Kind of looks like Boris Karloff.
The John Cena right hook, fat head. That's $99. 99 cents.
Good Lord.
The attitude adjustment fat head, the mural fat head, and last but not least, the WWE United States Championship World Word Life Kids title belt. So there you go.
Now that sounds like some slamming John Cena merchandise. What's the cheapest thing on CM Punk's list?
We'll check here in a second.
I like giving
probably
you these
like a dollar. Probably everything's on clearance now for him.
Yeah.
Speaking of CM Punk, man, people got to stop chanting for this guy. That's just getting old, man.
Yeah. I'm kind of getting tired of it, too. It's just like, he's gone. Yeah, what are you people
He chose to leave, you know?
Yeah.
Let him be. Right. I'm not saying, like fuck this guy, but just, you know, let the guy live, man. If he doesn't want to come back, he doesn't want to come back. Fuck it.
Mm-hmm.
He, too, is also the rubber bracelet.
Man. That's just so not satisfying. I want something crazy to be like their cheapest item.
He's got some wrist gloves. I wonder if he's got a monkey. He's got a zombie. You can get the CM Punk zombie.
What does a zombie do?
It eats brains. Looks like he's holding a pizza. I'll get you a picture here. I don't get it. It's like a lawn gnome, but he's a zombie.
Well, this could be the most bizarre item on WWE Shop.
I kind of like it. I don't know what you do with it. It's just like a ceramic zombie CM Punk. Why do they make this stuff? Like, why would that be? Why would that be a thing?
No. I ain't seen it.
You know what's weird? The only two zombies they actually have is AJ and CM Punk.
Really?
But, yeah.
I don't see any more monkeys.
Where's he holding the pizza?
The small picture looked like it was a pizza.
Like I can see like the wrapping around his hand looking like a pizza.
John Cena's the only monkey they make. Yeah, there's two zombies. They're AJ and CM Punk. You would think they'd make an Undertaker zombie.
Yeah, really.
It's very weird. So there you go. They still have the AJ Lee piggy banks left.
Man, they have really, really crappy merchandise for the Warrior. I would expect him to have better stuff, because, you know, he can have some really cool shirts and stuff with all the graphics, but I don't know. All his designs are pretty shitty.
Yeah, I like the one where it's just his face paint in the front. That's cool.
Yeah, but I don't know. I would expect them. Remember the jacket that they had for the Ultimate Warrior, like in the early 90s?
Starter jacket.
Stuff like that, yeah.
Yeah, I used to have a Larry Bird starter jacket like that. They have a Warrior armband and tassel package.
Hell yeah. That's what I need to show up the guns with.
Gotta get
just run into my gym like a fucking Ultimate Warrior. Like, give me those words!
Gotta get the guns first.
You might hurt my feelings.
Aww. They have an Authority t-shirt. Who would buy that?
Oh my god. Are you serious? I never see that.
I guess it's a WrestleMania 30 shirt, but it just says the Authority on the front. The Authority is the Yes Movement. They got new Sheamus shirts that just say fella.
See, they were smart about the Authority shirt, though. They didn't really incorporate Triple H or any kind of names into the shirt, so it looks like, it doesn't really look like a wrestling shirt, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It just says the Authority, and it just has some kind of design.
The signature sounds and music at WWE.com. WWE Best of Raw after the show. What does that mean?
Is that like their backstage pass thing or something?
Well, no.
It is the backstage pass.
Word. Jimmy That's, Jam knows.
I never even watch it anyway. Never mind buying the DVD of the best of it. Alright. So, thank you for calling me, Shaheen. You're a good man.
Alright, man. I appreciate it.
They have an Authority pin, Incher.
Ooh. Pin is mightier than the sword.
Mm-hmm. They got a... They got a Hollywood Hogan bandana.
Ooh, I do like Hollywood Hogan.
Do you? I do too. They got a Rip Thomas Rip'em t-shirt.
Is that from No Holds Barred?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Awesome. They got some shirts from some of the people in NXT. They have The Ascension and Paige.
Huh.
That's interesting.
I'm surprised they'd even make that for somebody who's just in developmental.
Mm-hmm. They got Bo Dallas. Do you believe, Incher?
Better believe it.
Believe. These are neat, actually. They got Yes foam arms. I'm never really big on... Well, they're kind of okay, but that's actually pretty good neat.
What do you think about the bunny crying on the Adam Rose Express?
I couldn't give a shit about that.
Yeah, I don't like that, dude. I don't understand the appeal there. What's supposed to get people into this guy?
I don't know.
Just don't get it.
I don't know. It's a very polarizing thing. Some people are just love it. They're just like jerking to it. They just can't get enough of it. And then some people are just like, they hate it. There's some crazy Undertaker merchandise, I'm sure.
What's the craziest?
They've got an Undertaker replica urn.
Man.
It's only $49.99. They also have a ring finger.
What?
Just like that Cena one, only it's Undertaker. They got him as the Dead Man with a motorcycle.
Hmm.
All right, let's see here. We got Swax on the line.
What's going on, people?
Not a whole lot, Swax.
Not ready to take a nap.
Me too.
Let's go. Make it quick, boy.
Yeah, I want to talk about Raw and everything that happened last Monday and stuff. First of all, I know everybody didn't give two shits about Batista coming back. His role winning the Royal Rumble and headlining WrestleMania was the biggest mistake that WWE did for him, because nobody wanted him in the main event. They could care less about him anymore.
Who?
But,
who?
I know, but, two shits. I'm saving that for a rainy day.
Who was the worst guy ever in the main event? I missed the
part. I said about Batista.
Oh, Batista.
I said ever since Batista came back, the WWE made the biggest mistake by letting him win the Royal Rumble and headlining WrestleMania, because the fans...
I don't think it mattered. It hurt I don't think it hurt the Royal Rumble, but I don't think it hurt WrestleMania at all, because the WrestleMania was really about Daniel Bryan. And so I actually think, if you look at it now, I think that was, it was better than if Daniel Bryan would have won the Royal Rumble and then went into WrestleMania. I think it was better having him have to win a match on the WrestleMania itself to get into the title picture and then win the title. I think you could have asked for a better way to get the belt on Daniel Bryan than what they did at WrestleMania. It was a great moment.
Yeah, it was a great moment, but now I think Batista has a... place now that where he could get a little over that
much
now,
better steel.
Now that Evolution is starting to get back together.
Evolution is a mystery.
Because you know, I dig that that group. You know, when Flair was on and everything. That was a great, masterful group. I like how they ran the group. And now that Triple H is you know, at the helm now, instead of Ric Flair, I think that what Randy Orton has really nothing else better to do, and now Batista, that he's one of the most hated people in wrestling right now because he's in that bad club. I think that Triple H should get somebody else to be part of Evolution.
Should they get a young guy in there, Incher? Because Evolution is a mystery. But you got Evolution. So the idea of Evolution was at the time you had the current guy, Triple H, you had the older veteran, you know, the guy in the end of his career, Ric Flair, and then you had the guys, you know, coming up. So now, right now you've got you've got like the guy in the prime of his career, Orton, and then you've got, I guess you could almost put Batista in the old Triple H role, because he's kind of on the end, and then maybe you could say Triple H is like the Flair role now. So, but you need a young guy, just starting out. Who would you put in there?
I think I would put Bo Dallas.
Nah.
Bring somebody that's real good, that's ready to be,
he's not real,
you know, coming up to the main roster from NXT. Put him in Evolution and make a nice fourth member.
I don't like Bo Dallas in the group. I don't think he's very good.
Plus, hey, when they had Randy Orton in there, yeah, nobody thought he would be any good.
Yes, they did. Everyone in the world thought he would be the next huge star.
Well, back then, Randy Orton was just like Bo Dallas.
No, nah. I don't know. I think Bo Dallas already has his own gimmick too. So I think you want a guy that doesn't have a really full blown gimmick. Bo Dallas to me is his gimmick. Who do you think, Incher? Who would you put in there? I'd say drop Fandango's gimmick and put Fandango in there as under his real name.
Oh, Johnny Curtis?
Or whatever you want to call me, or you can pick up a new name. But drop the Fandango gimmick, and yeah, do it. I think it would work. What do you think, Incher? Did we lose Incher? I don't know. But that's who I'm saying. Fandango, I think, could be good. We need to drop Fandango. Fandango gimmick, it's a bomb. It's over. It was very short-lived. Drop that, and just, I think you put Fandango in Evolution under a different name.
What'd you ask me a minute ago?
Who would you put in Evolution as like the young guy? if you're going to add it.
Evolution is the young guy.
I suggested Fandango by dropping the Fandango gimmick.
Hmm.
I actually think he could be good, but I think the Fandango gimmick is a hindrance.
Hindering.
Yes.
Kind of like Dolph Ziggler in the Spirit Squad.
Kind of just Dolph Ziggler in general.
Andrew, I was thinking about like doing like Bo Dallas in there. That he would have that. He's already good star power. Nah. Imagine him in Evolution with Triple H and Batista and Randy Orton.
Not a good fit, in my opinion.
Let's get Colt Cabana in there.
What? No, terrible.
Just put him in there. Be good times.
Terrible.
Great memories.
Who's that other guy that looks like that was all jacked up they had on there for a little while with the Canadian dude? He's like his bodyguard. Mason Ryan.
Oh. Forgot about that dude.
Mason Ryan and Fandango. There you go.
Now, I want to also talk about Paige.
Okay.
And you know, since her WWE debut and what happened
and
what I saw on Raw.
And all kidding aside, she actually is good.
Yeah, she's definitely good. And, you know, I've seen all her NXT matches and, you know, all the stuff that she's done on NXT. She's a badass. Mm-hmm. She will come at you. She will not be afraid to fight you. Yet when she's bringing up in this main roster role, they're making her look like an irrelevant, weak rookie.
No, that's stupid. She came out and won the title.
Yeah, but if you saw the match she had against Alicia Fox, I mean, Paige would go right up to Alicia Fox and shove her face in her face and just go at it over there. Just like she does to Emma, just like she did to Summer Rae, just like she does to Sasha Banks. She's not afraid to go up to people's face and have it out with them.
So I want to say, Incher.
Yes, sir.
I want to thank everyone that came on the show tonight. Thank Grant. I want to thank Big Bully Busick. I want to thank Joseph Bruin. I want to check out the New England Fan Fest and New England Hall of Fame's coming up. It's going to be good times. Everyone go up there and check out Mickey Grant's documentary's trying to get made.
Sounds like a pretty damn good convention that guy's putting together there.
Yeah.
Sure.
A lot of fun.
Mickey Grant working on some good stuff, too.
Mm-hmm. So, and join us here next week. We will have Rene Dupree. I'm looking forward to that one.
That'll be awesome, yeah.
And until then, though, the balcony is closed.
No more popcorn Swax.
And no more beer.
You can't drink beer at a movie theater.
You can at the ones I go to anyway. They serve beer and wine and hard cider and all kinds of stuff.
Jack goes to the cool movie theater.
I do. I go to the Brattle and I go to a Coolidge. Both of them serve alcohol. You think about that, Incher? Are you appalled?
Hey, I guess, you know, if you want to watch some movies and get drunk, who am I to say it's wrong?
Why wouldn't you? That's a fun way to watch. The Coolidge, I went there and they had a 12-hour movie marathon. 12 hours!
12 hours and nothing but watching movies.
Usually we just smuggle in our own alcohol so you don't have to buy it. It's kind of expensive.
They allow you to drink and then you're like, well, we'll just sneak our own in.
We also sneak in ones you're not supposed to drink in. The hell? You didn't do it up, Incher.
Why do you just become a derelict? You're sneaking beer into a movie theater.
Not beer. I don't like beer. I like I like bourbon.
Soon you'll be taking like shoe polish and melting it and sifting it through a piece of bread just so you can get drunk.
This is what Jack does. He gets all those little, when you go on a plane and you get those little things of liquor, they're like 3-ounce bottles of liquor.
Yep.
Yeah, Jack would like stuff them on his hat, and after that, he would just go right into the movie theater, and he'll pull out little ones, little vodkas here, little whiskeys here, little rums here, and stuff, and they'll just drink it.
Yeah, I just bring an old bottle.
Yep.
I don't think your hat's that big.
I don't need a hat. Just bring it, put it in my pants.
There's plenty of room down there.
I'll put it in my camera bag, actually.
Do these movie theaters not check for anything?
What kind of movie theater do you go to? They just, like, pat you down.
It's like you're not supposed to have, like, a camcorder in a movie theater.
They let us tape. They let us film at the Coolidge.
I was just saying, like, you know, to keep down on piracy.
I don't give a shit.
What if I pirate this movie, man? I don't give a shit.
That's how Lloyd Kaufman was. He's like, film the whole movie.
You're like, man, no wonder Troma don't make money.
His wife was just a little bit. And he's like, oh, film the whole thing.
So, Jack, are you going to get your Paige's t-shirt from WWE shop?
Nope.
Come on, you have to walk around with a nice Paige shirt.
Nope.
I thought screaming, ah! just walk around and pretend you're like Kevin Tourette.
Are we still on the air?
Yeah, we're still on the air. Of course we're still on the air. Let's get out of here. All right, everybody. See you next week. I'm going to have a big interview with Rene Dupree.
Biggest.
How did that dude say it? Ree-ree? Or Rene Dupree. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Hey, this is PCO Pierre Caldwellette, and you're listening to Tin Your Head Honline.com.